Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and light me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from the land.
Right, alright, alright. How you doing, everybody? Good morning. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the WGN Skyline studio. 18 stories about beautiful downtown Chicago, and we are here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich follows at 5 with the opening bell, and Steve Cochran has your morning drive at 6. And how you doing? It's Wednesday, Wildcard Wednesday. You hear me, Wildcard Wednesday? Get your requests in. We'll play them later. It's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Stay connected with us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. And subscribe to our podcast. We have lots of people who listen to us via podcast. We thank you for that. Let's continue to have more people sign up and subscribe to our podcast. When the show is over, every single second of the show is podcast. I know some people sleep between 1 and 5 a.m. on weekday mornings, so they can't listen, but you can listen via podcast. It's real easy. It's free. Go to iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts, find the Nick D Show, subscribe. It will automatically be sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So there you go. Tomorrow, September 26th, is the 50th anniversary of the release of the Beatles' Abbey Road, which is widely considered one of the greatest albums of all time. So there's been celebrations going on over the 50th anniversary of Abbey Road. So we're going to talk Beatles this morning and talk about Abbey Road and maybe Beatle covers and Beatles songs that were covered by the Beatles. And other Beatle topics. But to kick it off, we're going to welcome the man who I think is the biggest Beatle, without question, the biggest Beatle expert I've ever met in my life, author Robert Rodriguez, not the Robert Rodriguez who makes the Spy Kid movies, but Robert Rodriguez, author, Beatle expert, and he hosts a podcast called Something About the Beatles. He knows so much about the Beatles, and we're going to jump in and specifically talk about Abbey Road, which we will also talk about as during the show as well. So Robert Rodriguez, the Beatle expert, is going to be here, and we're going to celebrate all things Beatles this morning, particularly Abbey Road. We've got some facts about Abbey Road that we're going to get to, and some, like I said, bands that have covered the Beatles over the years, and some of the best Beatles songs that were covered. There you go. So our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text if you want to jump in with us. You can do that throughout this morning. And Wildcard Wednesday will kick off a little bit later on. All right. Let's say hello to my producer, Tom Hush. Tom, how are you?
I'm great, Nick. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm all right. Looking forward to talking about the Beatles.
Yeah, love the Beatles. Beatles are great. Although I would consider myself more of a Rolling Stones person, but that's...
Oh, we're doing the Rolling Stones Beatles thing, are we? I'm a Beatles guy.
Yeah. No disrespect in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. But yeah, that's always been a thing. Rolling Stones or Beatles? I say both, but I'm a Beatles guy. If I had to, you know, if I had to pick from the two, I would pick the Beatles for sure. So, Abbey Road, great record, released 50 years ago tomorrow, and man,
it's hard to believe.
It is hard to believe that it's been 50 years since then. We also have some audio that we're going to play. A little bit later on during our Beatles show here. Paul McCartney was on Stephen Colbert's show on Monday night, and I watched it yesterday morning. I watched it Tuesday morning when I got home from work, and it was amazing. It was great. He dedicated almost the entire hour to Paul McCartney. There were no guests. There were no musical guests. There were no stand-ups. He did his monologue, one part of his monologue, because normally his monologue is at least twofold. He did one part of his monologue, and then he had Paul McCartney come out, and they talked for almost an hour.
Well, when you have someone of that caliber, you have to give them as much time as possible.
Yeah. And he knew that. And the other thing about it is, you know, and I'll probably, you know, talk about this with Robert when he gets here, or when he comes into the studio. Stephen Colbert's a great interviewer anyway, but when he really, really, really reveres and likes someone, it's incredible. And it was, he did such a really great job with that interview. And we'll hear little bits and pieces of it as we celebrate the 50th anniversary of Abbey Road and talk about the Beatles this morning. We got some facts about Abbey Road that we'll get to, too. In the newsroom is Vic Vaughn, who recently discovered Abbey Road.
That's right.
Not too long ago.
Wasn't that long ago.
And you really liked it.
I loved it, yeah.
Yeah.
Couldn't wait because I've seen that, you know, that album cover's like so famous.
Yes.
Even I had seen that and could recognize that one, but I couldn't wait to listen to it. It was great.
Yeah, it's
I loved
a great
it.
Record, and it's 50 years old tomorrow.
Hmm.
And so we're going to talk all about that album and more.
And I'm going to have to listen to this show later because I'll be busy in here, but I feel left out. I really wish I could listen.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and this guy, I'm telling you, Robert Rodriguez, I've never met someone who knows more about the Beatles than he does. He's written several books about them, and he's got a very successful podcast called Something About the Beatles. And whenever you want to talk about the Beatles, this is the guy. This is the guest that you have. So Abbey Road, 50 years old tomorrow. Cubs, pretty much done. Pretty much done after last night where they just fell apart. I mean, Hendricks only had a no-hitter going into the sixth. And then, you know, in the seventh inning, the whole thing fell apart. And so you can't beat Pittsburgh. You can't make the postseason. So they will be, if they lose tomorrow, they're eliminated. Or tonight, I should say. They're eliminated. Like, they can't mathematically make the postseason. So, you know what they've been calling it? You know, remember, what was the guy's name who balanced the...
The guy
who balanced
Cubs
his hat
on his forehead. I can't remember.
What was the guy's name? Curly? Not Curly. I can't remember the guy's name.
Yeah, I'm looking
Tom,
for
Tom, do you remember the guy's name who balanced the Cub hat on his head?
Oh, I don't remember his name.
It's like a one syllable, or not a one syllable, it's like a two syllable name. Like Jolly or something like that. But anyway, they haven't won a game since that night when he was and so now they're blaming him.
Yogi.
What is it?
Yogi,
right. They're blaming, it's called the Yogi curse.
You're kidding
no,
me.
No, they're
do
calling,
we really need to do this again?
They're blaming it on this guy. They're blaming it on the guy who entertained everybody in the bleachers and everybody across the nation by balancing his hat on his head and dancing.
That's kind of unfair for him. He was having a lot of fun, and he's a Cubs fan.
Yeah. So they're calling it Yogi Gate. Not Yogi Gate. The Yogi Curse. So, anyway. All right, listen, we're going to break, and when we come back, we're going to jump into our Beatle talk. We're celebrating the Beatles this morning. And if you're a Beatle fan, stick around and listen all morning long, discussing Abbey Road on the 50th anniversary and talking about the Beatles in general. And we want to hear from you guys throughout the morning. Talk or text 312-981-7200. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. It is Wednesday, Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requested now. That's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. We're going to play a round of Know Your Onion a little bit later on, too. And we're mostly going to talk about the Beatles this morning. The fact is that tomorrow is the 50th anniversary of Abbey Road. And so that's a big deal. And we're going to talk about that and some other Beatle topics throughout the morning as we celebrate the 50th anniversary of Abbey Road. But welcoming to the studio is an author, a Beatles expert, the host of Something About the Beatles podcast, Robert Rodriguez. He's been on the show several times. And we love to welcome him back. Robert, how are you been?
Been great, Nick. Great to be back.
Yeah, good to see you. So tell everybody about, like, what was the last book you wrote about the Beatles?
Last book I wrote was Solo in the 70s. That was sort of my sequel companion volume to Fab Four FAQ 2.0, covering 70 to 80. And I couldn't get it all in one book, so I expanded it into two volumes.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're Something About the Beatles podcast. Mm-hmm. How's that going?
It's going great. I mean, it's been unbelievably busy. You can imagine this year, a lot of 50th anniversaries, starting with Let It Be at the beginning of the year, the Let It Be sessions and the rooftop and all that. And now we're kind of winding down the Beatles' career 50th anniversaries, but there's still going to be more to talk about. So.
Sure, of course. There always is.
Always.
Tell
always.
Me about, remind everybody about your personal experience being a Beatles fan. How did it all start for you?
It just started as being sort of a latter-day Beatle fan. The Beatles were split up and gone by the time my fandom started, and it was due to the Red and Blue album compilations, which there was nothing less cool than being a Beatle fan at the time I became one, because right. everybody was into Zeppelin and Rush and Kiss and all that stuff. So that was kind of my nature anyway, is not to be what the popular kids were doing. But, you know, you can't go wrong with the greatest band in the world. And even now, I mean, you look at this year, besides the 50th of everything, you had the Yesterday film.
Yeah.
You had the Tarantino film with the, you know, the peripheral Beatle tie-in with Manson, such as it is. And that's been the kind of stuff that's been keeping me busy all year. You know, just all these anniversaries and talking to people that were there, that sort of thing.
How often do you hear, when you talk to Beatles fans, how often do you hear that their introduction to the Beatles was the Red and Blue albums? I mean,
they have to be of a certain age.
Yeah, I guess
now
so,
it's turning into Beatles 1 with
The number one hits, right. Oh, man, that makes me feel old.
Right.
That makes me feel old. I've told you this before. It's really strange. The Beatle album that was in our... We didn't have a lot of Beatles albums in the house for some reason. But the Beatle album that I kind of grew up on as a kid... that I listened to mostly, it's a strange one, was the Hey Jude album, the compilation record.
Isn't that interesting? Because, again, it's one of these things, I've talked to plenty of people that was their gateway.
Yeah.
And that was maybe my third Beatle album after Red and the Blue.
Yeah.
And it's such a weird thing, because back when I became a fan, and maybe it was your case too, there wasn't a whole lot of Beatle literature out there.
No, yeah.
And so you see this picture that's on the cover. I didn't know at the time, but it's literally from the last group photo session.
Yeah.
August 22nd, 1969.
Yeah.
And the album opens with Can't Buy Me Love.
I know. It's so weird.
It's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
There's something weird here.
Yeah. It's great. I mean, obviously it's great because there's a ton of great songs on it.
Yeah.
But it just, because it, you know, covers so much time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a weird compilation record, but that's the one that was my gateway.
A great gateway to have, because it's a crash course, you know, from 64 through 69. It skips the psychedelia and the two, you know, weird stuff. It's all pretty much up-tempo rock.
Right.
And so if you're, like, new to the Beatles, there's not a single track in there to, you know, be weird or jarring. It's all readily accessible stuff.
There's no Revolution Number 9.
No. But the Hey Jude, man. I mean, that's the popular Beatles song of all time.
Yeah. Did you happen to see Paul McCartney the other night on Colbert?
I did.
I thought it was great. I thought it was absolutely great. And Colbert clearly, I've said this before, I think Colbert is one of the best talk show hosts.
I agree.
On TV. And when, you know, he's a great interviewer.
Mm-hmm.
Right out of the gate, always great. But when he reveres someone, when he really, really likes someone, it's real special. And he dedicated the whole show to him. He just did his monologue. That was it. And then it was all Paul McCartney. I thought it was great.
I thought it was great, too. There's people I saw quibbling about it. Oh, you know, Paul's telling the same story he's been telling for years. They're new to somebody. It's not meant for the hardcores. And honestly, you know, speaking of Colbert as an interviewer, you can tell when he's really affected by something that he kind of loses himself.
Yeah.
And when he spoke of Band on the Run and his association with the death of his father and brother, that's a really revealing personal thing that he's sharing with Paul McCartney.
Right.
I don't think he tells that story gratuitously. So.
No, he doesn't. Yeah. And it's a, you know, it's a true story, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I also, you know, I love the fact that, you know, because the Wings don't get the respect that they deserve. I love Wings.
Yeah.
I think they're great. And I think those albums are great.
Million selling band. It's a string of number one singles.
Absolutely. And I know they get, I don't know what it is. Why do Wings get trashed by so many people?
It's a very good question. And I just did a two-part interview on my show about that. I had a woman on who's a PhD student who studied rock criticism of the 70s. And a lot of it comes down to, they couldn't figure out, they were sort of coming to terms with the definitions of pop and rock when Beatles were around, and Wings were around. It's like, well, what are they?
Yeah.
Should we like this? Is it dangerous enough? Is it subversive enough? Because that was the whole mystique of the rock critic as the rock icon going on at that time.
Yeah, Lester Bangs and everybody.
Yes,
yeah,
bingo.
Yeah.
And so Paul wasn't quite cool enough in what he was doing. But damn, he's selling tons of records. And then there was a Lester Bangs article in Cream where he's attending a Wings concert, and try as he is to be too cool for this, he can't help but get sucked into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It is. I think they're I think Venus and Mars and Band on the Run are two of the best albums that anybody from the Beatles is associated with.
Solid, start to finish.
Great stuff. And and I love the fact that that personal story that Colbert told was about a Wings song and not a Beatles song. For some reason, I'm a year younger than Colbert.
Okay.
And so, like, I vividly remember when Bands on the Run came out and was on the radio. I remember that time period, you know, vividly. And if you're a kid, and he was a kid, you know, he was young when his brother and his father died.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is an impactful thing. When you're like 9, 10 years old, like I was like 9 or 10 when Bands on the Run came out. When Bands on the Run, that's a VH1 reality show from a few years ago. Band on the Run came out. And that I was really, you know, if something emotional had happened to me at that time period, I definitely would have latched onto that song.
Music absolutely attaches itself to emotional events in your life.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people, I remember reading this for older people who were around when the Beatles were an active band, that a lot of them had this association with Christmas because the Beatles tended to put out albums at Christmas time. And so their first hearing of the White Album or Rubber Soul or whatever would have been from Under the Christmas Tree.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't matter what time of year they hear a certain Beatles song, they'll flash back to Christmas.
Yeah.
And so it's got that power.
Our newsman, Vic Vaughn, who works with us on the show on the overnights.
Beatle guy.
He is no, he's not a Beatle guy.
He's not?
No.
Somebody is.
Vic is a he had no musical knowledge whatsoever before this year.
Oh, really?
And it's absolutely true. And he would be the first to admit it. I'm not talking out of school. He admits that he had absolutely no music knowledge whatsoever, and he got tired of it. So he decided that he was going to educate himself, and so he's going through this thing for the past few months where he's been listening to every album that it's on the Rolling Stone top 100 albums of all time list, and then researching them and learning about the artists and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
He was tired of not knowing what music, you know, like we would make music references and he's like, I have no idea what you're talking
That's
about.
Amazing.
So he's in the middle of that. So he's been listening to a lot of Beatles because there's a lot of Beatles entries on there.
And it's building toward number
and
one.
It's building toward number one, yes. Mm-hmm. And so we discussed Abbey Road with him when he listened to it. He loved it. How where does Abbey Road rank as far as like best Beatles records? I know a lot of people who think it's the best.
Oh yeah, that's definitely it's up there because it's really hard to dislike, especially if you're not a super critical fan. You just want a nice listening experience from start to finish. There's so many songs on there that have had heavy radio rotation, Come Together, Something, Here Comes the Sun, and other things that became more popular later, like when the Beatles' Love came out and you started hearing Because with just the vocals,
right.
You know, things like that. It is a ton of ear candy, and it's not in any way to diminish it. It just is. It's them at the peak of their craftsmanship.
Yeah. And I love it. I mean, I love that record. Mm-hmm. I love all the Beatles albums. But my favorite, and we've talked about this before, mm-hmm. I love Rubber Soul and Revolver. Those are my two favorites.
Did I ask you if it was American or the British Rubber Soul?
It's probably the British Rubber Soul.
Okay.
Yeah.
Drive My Car.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But no, I like those. But to me, and we've talked about this, those are transition records.
Mm-hmm.
From they were one band before those records, and then they were a different band after those records.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that journey. I like those two albums.
It's a lot more interesting. It's experimental. They're just feeling their way, not knowing how this trip is going to end.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's my, you know, I don't want to bash Pepper. Everybody loves Pepper. It's a cultural touchstone.
Yes.
It's bigger than the sum of its songs.
I agree.
For sure.
I agree.
But to me, it's a lot more the work of craftsmanship who knew what they were doing versus Revolver, which is a total experiment from start to finish.
Yeah.
And so therefore it's more interesting.
Yeah. I when I was a kid, when I first heard Revolver, I was like, whoa, you know, and stuff like Tomorrow Never Knows. I was like, man, oh man. But yeah, well, listen, we're going to take a break, Robert, and your podcast, everybody can find it at like iTunes and all the places where you can get podcasts.
Yeah, it's coming back to iTunes. It was off because we had to change servers because I did a show at Ramsey Lewis and it crashed the server.
Oh no.
Uh-huh. Too many people at once.
I was going to say, you proud of that a little bit?
A little bit.
Yeah,
not the word proud
of. I would be. Yeah. Something About the Beatles is the podcast. Do you have a website that people can go
Somethingaboutthebeatles.com.
There you go. Somethingaboutthebeatles.com. That's easy enough. Okay. Robert, hang out for a second, okay? Robert Rodriguez is here. He's an award-winning author, and he's a Beatle expert, and we're talking Beatles on the eve of the 50th anniversary of Abbey Road. Okay, we'll take a break for the news, and we'll come back more with Robert after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It is a Wednesday morning, Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in. We'll play them later. It's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. We're going to have a round of Know Your Onion a little bit later on. That's when Tom is your host, and he will read you a series of news headlines. And you have to guess whether they're real or they're from the satirical newspaper, The Onion, because the real news is just really crazy right now. So it's difficult to know. But you'll win some prizes. We are on the eve of the 50th anniversary of the release of Abbey Road. That is tomorrow. So we're talking Beatles stuff all morning long, celebrating that and much more. We're also going to talk about some of the best Beatles covers, but bands that cover Beatles songs. And but right now we got Robert Rodriguez is here. He's a Beatle expert. He's an author. He's the host of the podcast Something About the Beatles. And we wanted to have Robert in on this, the 50th anniversary of Abbey Road. Robert, welcome back.
Thank you.
We missed you on, usually you come in right before Beatle, but I keep calling it Beatles Fest.
We all do.
I know. Fest for Beatles fans.
There you go.
But we missed you this year. I'm sorry about that, but we're glad to have you on now. You've
Absolutely.
Been keeping busy anyway.
Oh my God, yeah.
How did Fest for Beatle fans go?
It was good. It was good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always good to reconnect with fans and with friends that are in the business, friends of mine who've been on my podcast that write books and things like that.
Yeah.
And every year it gets more and more expansive. So
yeah.
it's one of those things that it's like a little vacation weekend, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's always, I went for several years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't gone in a while, but it was an annual tradition. My friends and I would get a couple of hotel rooms and we would stay all weekend and just have a blast.
Geek out.
Yeah, exactly. 50th anniversary of Abbey Road. I know, you know, all these anniversaries that are happening are keeping you very busy, but you're actually going to Rochester today.
Yes. Yeah. The Eastman School. Yeah. They're doing a 50th anniversary of Abbey Road symposium this weekend. So a lot of Beatles scholars and people like that, that are going to be just basically every nuanced angle of Abbey Road and the Beatles generally.
Right.
Yeah. So it's cool. I like immersing myself in this.
Yeah.
I have to tell you.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about side two of Abbey Road.
Yes.
I absolutely love it. It's my favorite song on the album.
Sure.
Talk a little bit about how that came to be, about how side two came to be. I mean, it's a Paul thing.
It was Paul working with George Martin. No, this is the thing. There's so much stuff that the interviews they gave after they split that were particularly negative and nasty, just John Lennon in particular just wanting, you know, just lay waste to anything to do with the Beatles because he's promoting himself then. And he talked about that directly, about how that was more Paul's baby. And I like rock and roll, man. I don't like that, you know, tone poems or whatever you call them.
Right.
But, you know, the thing is, I dug up for the thing that I'm writing, that I'm delivering at Rochester, an interview in the spring of 69, months before Abbey Road comes out. We're talking to New Musical Express, and he's very excited talking about, me and Paul are working on this collection of songs, this collage we're putting together.
Yeah, yeah.
He was invested in it like everybody was.
Yeah.
And it was songs that they thought had some value, but not enough to really labor over finishing them. Some of them went back to when they were in India with the Maharishi,
right,
demoing these songs like Me, Mr. Mustard, and stuff like that. And, you know, John had kind of moved on by then and what he wanted to sing about, but they both recognized, you know, we could do something with these songs and sort of string them together and create something bigger than the whole of its parts.
Yeah.
That would be a little bit of an advance, because the Beatles always wanted to do something different from their peers. And that was the approach they took. And now that they had George Martin back on board, because he wasn't so much during Let It Be or the White Album, you know, he lives for stuff like that. So it's like, absolutely, let's go. And you may know that originally Her Majesty, which ended up as the hidden track, it was originally incorporated into the medley. And it was alternating John song, Paul song, John song, Paul song.
Mm-hmm.
And originally it came between Me, Mr. Mustard, and Polythene Pam.
Mm-hmm.
But when you hear that, and you'll hear it as part of the package now, the original edit of that, it brings things to a crash. It just doesn't fit.
It wouldn't fit.
No.
No.
It just doesn't make any musical sense. So they spliced it out, and Paul was all set to throw it away. It's just him and his acoustic. It's not anything produced or anything. But John Kurlander was the engineer who had been under strict instructions from EMI. If the Beatles put something on tape, never throw it away. And so, not knowing what to do, he spliced it to the very end of the master tape of Abbey Road, separated by 26 seconds of silence.
Right.
And then when they heard it by accident, by letting the reel play through, and that crash, it's like, this is cool.
Yeah.
They didn't know what a hidden track was yet, but they just invented it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Some people might be confused if they don't know. Abbey Road was actually the last album that they recorded together, even though Let It Be came out after.
That's correct.
So I just wanted to make sure, because you said, you know, White Album, Let It Be, and then they were working on Abbey Road. And some people might be a little confused. I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah. Let It Be, what became the Let It Be album and film, was cut, was put together right off the heels of the White Album, like separated by 6 weeks or so.
Yeah.
But that was, they're both 1969. And Let It Be project started out, you know, pretty rough. They didn't really have an idea what they wanted to do, and they're all in different directions. And George quit during the making of it, got talked back. But by the end of it, and the day before they finished the project, is when they did the rooftop thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they were so on fire, like, this is great. This felt so good. It felt so right. They rolled basically into the Abbey Road sessions. Most mm-hmm. people don't know that, but in February, they started with I Want You, She's So Heavy mm-hmm. and Something. So really, Abbey Road was put together over the course of several months, stopping and starting,
mm-hmm.
not just the summer.
Yeah. But it's a, and then, you know, and obviously how did it, you know, I mean, all these albums, sold well when Abbey Road came out. What was the response?
Well, the response publicly was, oh good, the Beatles are still working together, because this was coming during the year of a lot of John Yoko external activity in the Plastic Ono Band.
Yeah.
And of course, privately, we know that there was, you know, a lot of turmoil going on over business things and other issues.
Right.
But when it came out, like within a fortnight of that, the whole Paul is Dead thing started. And that's, you want to talk about something going viral before there was such a thing.
Absolutely.
It's amazing. And, you know, Capitol Records in the States, they weren't ones like, you know what? The record's flying off the shelves because people are wanting to interpret clues. So, you know, they weren't going to quash it right away.
Right.
You know,
right.
And, but, you know, a reporter from Life magazine went up to Scotland, tracked Paul down, confirmed he was alive, and it kind of petered out after that. But I this is the thing that amazes me, because I just cut a show on this. It'll be coming up, that there are people to this day full of YouTube channels and videos and blogs that swear, no, it's Paul. It's fake Paul, and it has been for 50 years.
And is it Billy Shears? Is that the
or William Campbell?
William Campbell.
Yeah, take your pick.
Yeah. William Campbell, because Billy's here is what they they say the lyrics are. For people who might not know the Paul is Dead thing, people started to interpret these clues on songs and on the album covers and inside the albums that were clues to the fact that that Paul died and he was replaced.
Yes.
Like one of them was, since we're talking about Abbey Road, he's barefoot on the cover of Abbey Road and they bury you with no shoes.
Yes.
And so people, that was one of the interpretations.
If there's anybody listening to this that doesn't know about the Paul is Dead thing, it blows your mind that something like this could get such traction out of nothing.
It was huge.
It was very huge.
Yeah.
And that album cover where they're all dressed distinctly different. You know, John is either an angel because he's all in white or he's the preacher.
Right.
Ringo is the undertaker. He's in a dark suit. Paul is the corpse, barefoot. His eyes are closed. Oh, right. Look, Paul McCartney was left-handed, but he's holding the smoke in his right hand.
Right.
It's a fake.
Yeah.
And George is dressed head to toe in denim. He's the gravedigger.
Right.
And there's the Beetle in the background parked in front of the studio. 28IF is the license plate.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it just, oh my God.
And there are clues like on the back of Pepper, Without You is coming out of the side of his head.
Yeah.
And
his back is turned.
His back is turned, right. And, in the White Album, there are the pictures on the inside in the booklet.
Yeah,
what's the Paul is like under. It's like he looks like he's underwater or he's dead.
Yeah,
he looks like his corpse. Yeah,
yeah,
in the poster. Yeah, on the poster that you put.
Right, like it looks like a drowned corpse or something.
Right.
Although the story was he died in a car accident. You know, there's car accident references in Beatles songs.
Right,
he blew his mind out in a car.
Right,
you were in a car crash and you lost your hair.
Right,
it's like.
Right.
Somebody stitches together.
And of course, I Buried Paul.
I Buried Paul.
Which is cranberry sauce.
Right.
Which is what they actually say is cranberry sauce.
Strawberry Fields, yep.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun with that when I first started to hear about that. Mm-hmm. I think it's hilarious. And I'm sure that, has Paul McCartney ever been really like asked about it, what he thinks of the...
Farley.
Oh, Chris Farley did write
this. Remember that? That wasn't true, right?
That's right. The incredible interview stylings of Chris Farley.
Yes.
That's great. So the Paul was on Stephen Colbert the other night, and I just thought the interview was great.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. And he didn't bring up the Paul is Dead thing. I thought at some point he would bring it up, because knowing Colbert, you know,
that kind of
direction for the interview would be something he would have fun with.
That's rich material there.
Yeah.
Especially when you have an whole hour to work with.
Yeah, I remember one year there was a gentleman, you probably know him. Mm-hmm. We were at Beetlefest. I still call it Beetlefest, sorry. But we were at Beetlefest, and a gentleman wrote an entire book about the Paul is Dead.
The Walrus was Paul.
Yeah, The Walrus was Paul. Yeah. And I saw him speak, and I bought his book. And what's his name?
I forget. Right
you forget?
Now.
Yeah, yeah, but he, but yeah,
yeah, he's passed away since.
Oh, he has.
Yeah, for real.
Okay. Oh, for real. That's not a hoax. Right? That's not a hoax. But anyway, it's really fun. It's kind of fun to look at all these ridiculous clues and see. And it is nuts that I mean nowadays these kind of things just. You know, there's a million of them.
Right.
Because you have the internet and you have all this, you know, social media and stuff. A rumor or some sort of weird thing about somebody dying can take place 2 seconds and it goes around the world.
You just go on Facebook for a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. And things pop up all the time.
Yeah.
And people have been dead for years would suddenly, like, newly dead be posted.
Yeah, I know. They post that. They post, like, obituaries for people who died, like, 8 years ago or 8 or 9 years ago. I see it on the internet. I'm like, wait a minute. That person died already.
Poor Gilligan.
Yeah. But to put it in perspective, that kind of happened throughout that whole time period with the Paul is Dead thing. It's just crazy.
There were magazines published about it. Like I said, Life magazine went and tracked him down.
Right.
F. Lee Bailey, the lawyer, did a TV special about it. Christopher Glenn from CBS was enumerating the clues.
Yeah.
It, just for it to get that kind of serious attention. This wasn't fringe stuff. This was moving into the mainstream.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Crazy stuff. All right, Robert, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Robert Rodriguez is here. He is an author and a Beatles expert. Been on the show several times, and he is the host of Something About the Beatles, and that's a podcast that you can get now. We'll take a quick break, and we'll come back, talk more Beatles with Robert after this on 720 WGN.
Bang, bang, Maxwell Silver Hammer came down upon her head. Bang, bang, Maxwell Silver Hammer made sure that she was dead.
Love this song. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720. It's Beatles morning, man. We are a day away from the 50th anniversary of Abbey Road, so we're going to celebrate with the Beatles. We got to Know Your Onion coming up, too. Robert Rodriguez is here. And this is really sad, but and I love that song.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. But the first thing that pops into my head is Steve Martin every time I hear
it. Oh, my God.
And I know that that's horrible because the movie is just a train wreck, the Sgt. Pepper movie.
It's a kitsch classic.
With Peter Frampton and the Bee Gees and George Burns. Mm-hmm. But I always, the two songs that stay with me, oddly, were on Abbey Road, and the other one is Aerosmith's version of Come Together, which is great. Their version of Come Together is great. A little bit later on, we're going to be talking about the best cover versions of Beatles songs. Do you have a couple you want to throw in before we get into that?
Ray Charles doing Eleanor Rigby, and Stevie Wonder doing We Could Work It Out.
That's way near the top of the list.
And Colbert said that too.
Said it was the best. Yeah, said that for because they talked about covers. We're going to play a piece of that, but we're going to talk about covers and open up the phone lines to everybody. I really like Got to Get You Into My Life by Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Yeah.
I really love that.
I didn't know this till I had him on the show, but Maurice White had been Ramsey Lewis's drummer.
What?
Yeah. In the Ramsey Lewis Trio, the second iteration of it, they're from Chicago.
Yeah.
And he'd been the drummer, and he described on my show when Maurice told him he's going to quit the form his own thing out in L.A. with singing and dancing.
Yeah, yeah.
And Ramsey's like, yeah, go ahead, Maurice. We'll see. What do you know?
Exactly. Abbey Road turns 50 tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And you were telling me a little bit off the air, I want to talk about it on the air, but they just discovered a tape.
Okay, there was... In the time between finishing Abbey Road and before Abbey Road is released, there was a meeting convened at Apple between John, Paul, and George. Ringo was in the hospital, so the tape recorded the meeting so that he would be privy to what was discussed. And it was them sitting around the table discussing their future. Now, it's been hyped as a newly discovered tape, and maybe the audio itself is newly discovered because now... I guess pieces of it are getting heard out in the public, which wasn't the case before.
Right.
But the tape itself has been discussed in John Lennon's lifetime. There were two books that quoted from it, Beatles Forever being one of them by Nicholas Schaffner, the other one being Anthony Fawcett's John Lennon One Day at a Time. And what's interesting about it is, you know, circling back to Maxwell, that gets discussed at this meeting.
Yeah, yeah.
How they agree that it's daft to record a song and put it on a Beatle record that none of them like, including the guy who wrote it. And why can't they just give it to Mary Hopkin or something like somebody like that?
Who was on Apple.
Yeah, who was on Apple. And I interviewed her daughter this year, and she didn't know that story.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, my God, Mom doing that song.
what other artists were on Apple?
James Taylor. His debut,
yeah.
A guy from Liverpool named Jackie Lomax, who they put everything into. They had Clapton on his record and the Wrecking Crew from L.A. And Paul Paul and George and Ringo playing on it. Couldn't get arrested. And I think it was mostly because Apple did not know how to market people. They could spot talent
Yeah.
And maybe it would find its way on its own, but they sure as hell didn't know, put these people on, as opening act on some big act that's out on the road.
Yeah.
Get them on TV. And it didn't happen.
Well,
so
Badfinger broke through.
They did break through despite everything, and then it ended up being a tragic story because they got screwed by their manager. But their talent was undeniable.
Oh, yeah. No, they were great. Badfinger they were great.
Yeah.
How closely did they work with the Beatles, Badfinger?
Okay. They were signed as the Ivies, and it was a slightly different iteration. Three of the same guys and a guy named Ron Griffiths on bass, and that was the group that recorded Come and Get It that Paul produced. And the reason was that the Ivies had put out a record and Apple hadn't been behind it, and it kind of stiffed, and they were complaining to the music press, we're on the Beatles label, but it doesn't mean much when we can't get a break.
Yeah.
And so Paul's like, you know what, I'm going to kill two birds with one stone. I'm supposed to write music for Ringo's movie, The Magic Christian. Here's a song I wrote. You guys record it. You have the hit with it, and you'll be on your way. And that's exactly what happened.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So Joey joins the group. They record No Matter What, which Apple sits on for half a year thinking it's not commercial.
Oh.
It comes out, becomes a smash. And that's the same album that has Without You on it.
Yeah.
So that was the big money spinner for Apple Publishing.
Yeah.
Nilsson, Mariah Carey, you name it. Just total evergreen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Amazing talent.
Absolutely. How did the Beatles officially announce their breakup?
They never officially announced it, giving a statement like, we're going our separate ways. But what happened was, John had, at just days after that meeting that was taped, you know, here he is at the meeting saying, I think for our next album, me and you, Paul, and George should each get three or four songs each. Ringo can have two if he wants, but we're going to split it up equally this way. And Paul, who, of course, is masterfully prolific, has everything to lose, he says, no. You know, that kind of regimented thinking is better for the military, not the Beatles. And so people were like, when this news came out of the tape, they're like, oh, see, Paul broke up the Beatles. He didn't want to record another album after Abbey Road. It, you know,
yeah,
you're taking it out of context.
Yeah.
Anyway, John goes off a week later to play in Toronto with Clapton and Alan White and Klaus Voormann. So he's feeling pretty good about, wow, that felt good. I can make music outside the Beatles. Comes back, says he wants a divorce. And then the Paul's Dead thing starts out. Abbey Road comes out. So behind the scenes, the public's not really knowing what's going on.
Right.
Come 1970, he puts out Instant Karma. Let It Be is finally coming out. Meanwhile, Paul's been working on his first solo album. So when he puts it out, he's like, you know what? I've been keeping my mouth shut to this point about John giving his resignation. I'm putting out my album. And he puts out this interview that he himself wrote all the questions to and then answered. And there's questions in there like, do you foresee a time when the Beatles get together to record again? No. Do you foresee a time of writing songs with John again? No. Was there a moment when you made this record you kind of wish Ringo was here? No. And he's not saying he's quitting the Beatles. He's saying time will tell. That's what he's saying. Very open-ended.
Yeah.
What's the headline in the paper? Paul quits the Beatles. That was how the word got out when John heard that he was fuming. And a guy I just had on the show was a journalist friend, Ray Connolly, who I told months before they'd quit the group. He goes, I told you that back when. Why didn't you publish it? And Ray's like, you told me not to, John. And he's like, you're the journalist, damn it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he felt that Paul had stolen a march on him to sell his record.
Oh, I got it.
Meanwhile, Paul's like, I didn't say I quit.
Yeah.
Because immediately he got all the scorn and hatred that John would have got if he was out there as a guy who broke up the Beatles.
Right. Right. Well, that's interesting how that went down.
Mm-hmm.
And then the solo careers, you've written books about
them. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
The solo careers. Who do you think had the most interesting solo work?
Well, George was the one, he was the master craftsman artist hiding in plain sight, getting his one song per side of a Beatle record.
Sure.
All of a sudden, the same year, everybody's despondent because the Beatles have split and they're fighting and it's just like an ugly divorce. That year's end, he comes out with a triple record debut album. A worldwide smash with My Sweet Lord and then What Is Life is the next single. And it's like all these great, great Beatle-worthy songs. So right out of the box, he's like the top Beatle. And that was like a revelation to people. People knew Paul was talented and John was talented.
Yeah.
It took John the longest to have a number one hit single.
Mm-hmm.
Not until 1974, if you can believe that, with Whatever Gets You the Night. And he had Elton's help for that.
Yeah, that was his only, well, not his only, but that was his first
one. Well, the next one was posthumous.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Okay. So only while he was alive, that's the only number one single he had.
It was the only number one single, because even people think Imagine was, that only made it to number three.
Okay.
It was blocked by the theme from Shaft and Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves.
Oh, no!
Yeah.
Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But Ringo had two number ones before John had one.
Photograph was that
one? That was one.
And she's six, or you're 16?
You're 16.
Yeah, and they were both from the same record.
Correct.
Yeah, which is a great album.
It is.
And he's got an all-star, well, no pun intended, but he mm-hmm. does have, like, unbelievable musicians on that record.
Opening track is a John Lennon composition with Ringo, John, and George on it.
Yeah.
And Billy Preston and Klaus.
Yeah.
It was the closest thing to a Beatle reunion. Three Beatles on one song. That
yeah.
was amazing. And so that helped sell the record for sure. It's like,
yeah.
you know, Paul's on the other side. He's on Year 16 and the song he wrote for Ringo. So,
it
was perfect timing and the perfect storm for Ringo.
Yeah. I've said this before that every, I think it's, is it every song named Photograph is good?
Oh, Def Leppard?
Def Leppard. And then, no, because Nickelback has a song called Photograph.
Oh,
so
there you go.
That throws that theory out of the.
Every Do It Again is a good song.
Yeah, Do It Again. I also say that Since You're Gone.
Okay.
Since You've Been Gone. Every Since You've Been Gone or Since You're Gone. Hmm. All of those are
okay.
All good. That's what I go with.
There's certain ones that just work no matter what the setting.
So, what's going to happen for the Let It Be anniversary? Is anything planned for that?
Oh, yes. You're familiar with Peter Jackson, being a movie buff, I'm sure you are.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Do you know that he was given all the extant footage from the Let It Be project, which is like 30 hours of film, 90 hours of audio of everything that was going on that was documented? You know, the film itself, Let It Be film, is like 89 minutes long.
Yeah.
It's kind of a bummer, except for the rooftop last 20 minutes.
Right.
And a lot of people complain that it's not really telling the true story of what happened there, which was not nearly as dismal as it comes off in the film.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, you don't want to overcorrect and make it one big holiday camp, but there was a lot more. If you think about it, you know, they talked about themselves as, oh, that was the most miserable thing on earth, only because it seems like their memories were shaped by watching the film.
Yeah.
And they didn't, if they'd listened to the audio, listened to how much fun they had, especially after Billy Preston joined, this is the thing. They went in there basically empty-handed, walked away with almost every song on Abbey Road debuted, all but five, the Let It Be album, three number one hit singles,
mm-hmm.
Get Back, Let It Be, Long and Winding Road.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if that's miserable, I mean, think of the productivity. That's unbelievable.
So Peter Jackson's putting something together?
He's putting together, yes, in whatever form. Next year, next spring, will be the 50th of the Let It Be album and film, and so they're going to try to time it to that.
Oh, man.
But that's going to be unbelievable.
That's going to be amazing. That's going to be so huge.
And see, you know, I've been talking about the Let It Be stuff on my show forever. I've had different experts on who've listened to all the tapes and stuff. We know that it's not as miserable as a lot of the public thinks it is, because the Beatles said it was.
Right.
So I think when Peter Jackson comes out next year, that's going to get all the attention, and they'll be catching up to where we've been for a while now.
Gotcha. All right. Robert, always a pleasure to have you on, man. Your knowledge of the Beatles just astonishes me every time we talk.
Always great to talk Beatles with you, man.
And you can go to somethingaboutthebeatles.com. There's a podcast. He's written several books. Beatle expert, and he's going to be busy for the rest of the year.
I am.
Happy anniversary for Abbey Road.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, see you later. That's Robert Rodriguez, everybody. We're going to take a break, and we got the news coming up, and then we're going to continue talking Beatles on this, the eve of Abbey Road's 50th anniversary. All right, so we'll take a break here on 720 WGN. Okay. So that's Cartman singing Styx. South Park comes back tonight, by the way. I have it on my DVR for sure, as I do every night that it's on. So who requested that?
That's coming to us from Glenn in Chicago.
Okay, Glenn, there you go. All right, Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. So, we were just talking about, but is Robert, like, that guy knows so much about the Beatles, it's unbelievable.
It's shocking.
It is. His books are so great, and he's just, he's really one of the foremost experts on the Beatles that you could possibly talk to. So it's fun to talk to him on this, the eve of the 50th anniversary of Abbey Road. We're going to talk more Beatles here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number with your thoughts on the Beatles and your comments via text or talk, and that's 312-981-7200. We're going to get into the best covers of Beatles songs. Lots of artists have covered Beatles songs over the years, but we want to talk about some of the best ones and what are your favorites. We'll get to that in a little bit, but here are some things that you might not know about Abbey Road. We covered a couple of these things when we talked to Robert. But ultimateclassicrock.com put together some facts about Abbey Road that you might not know. From its oft-imitated cover to the medley that covers up most of the second side, Abbey Road remains one of the Beatles' best-loved and most enduring albums. But how much do you really know about it? Sure, lots of people know it was recorded after but released before Let It Be, and there are plenty of Paul is Dead clues on the cover. But that's about it. So here are some things that you probably don't know about Abbey Road. Here we go. The first, following the turbulent sessions for The Beatles, which is the White Album, and Let It Be, longtime producer George Martin was through with The Beatles. He eventually agreed to work with them again after Paul McCartney pleaded with him, but only on the condition that Martin would be in complete control of the studio, just like the old days. George Martin would later describe Abbey Road as a happy record because everybody thought it was going to be the last. Here's another little fact that you might not know about Abbey Road. The album's working title was Everest, an inside joke about the brand of cigarettes smoked by engineer Jeff Emmerich. They had intended to shoot the cover photo at Mount Everest, but none of them wanted to make the long journey. Instead, McCartney suggested naming it after the street on which EMI Studios was located, which meant they could photograph themselves at the nearest crosswalk, which took about 30 minutes total. 30 minutes for one of the most classic album covers of all time. And, you know, I see people posting stuff online, like when they go to London and, you know, they'll do the crosswalk photo there. And then I see people criticizing them for doing it. Why would you do that? I would do that in a heart. It would be the first thing I would do.
Absolutely.
First thing I would do would walk across the street and have somebody take a picture. If I were three friends, I would do that.
Another good one I've seen is a friend of mine is a big Oasis fan.
Yeah.
He went to Manchester.
Oh, I see.
And he recreated the street photo for the album cover of What's the Story, Morning Glory.
Right.
And he did a very good job. The street hasn't changed all that much.
One of the first things I did when I went to New York was I went to the Lower East Side and took a picture in front of the building that's on the cover of Physical Graffiti, the Zeppelin album.
Got it.
Yeah. And I don't apologize for that at all. Has anybody ever taken a picture? Like, have you ever gone to Abbey Road? Anybody out there been to that intersection and took the famous photo? 312-981-7200. Talking Beatles this morning. If you want to jump in at any time with talk or text, please do. All right, how about this? In 1973, John Lennon was sued because the opening line of Come Together was very similar to the line from Chuck Berry's You Can't Touch Me. The out-of-court settlement forced Lennon to record three songs owned by publisher Morris Levy. These tracks became the impetus for John Lennon's 1975 covers album, Rock and Roll. Did not know that at all. So that explains Rock and Roll. I did not know that. I didn't know that at all. Wow. Next up, for all the internal squabbling within the group at the time, over the years, they all, including George Martin, said that George Harrison's ballad was Abbey Road's high point. They weren't the only ones who felt that way. Frank Sinatra recorded it twice, calling it the greatest love song in the past 50 years. However, for a long time, he mistakenly said that it was a Lennon-McCartney composition. Something was the only Harrison song to be on the A side of a Beatles single. Yeah. So we only made B sides on singles before that.
That kind of makes me sad that they never really gave George the chance that he should have had.
Yeah. But he's your favorite Beatle, right?
He is, yeah.
Okay. Next, originally attempted during Let It Be, McCartney brought it back to the group for the next album. Harrison called it fruity. Ringo Starr took it one step further, calling it the worst track that we ever had to record, adding that it was a few days to record, but it went on for effing weeks. But McCartney defended it by saying it was just a silly story that epitomizes the downfall of life. Just when everything was going smoothly, bang, bang, down comes Maxwell's Silver Hammer and ruins everything. We played that a little bit earlier on.
That's one of my favorites. It's such a good song.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Very clever. And I know you're a fan of Across the Universe.
Yes.
And the subtle nod they give to it, I want to say it's kind of in the back half of that movie with Max just banging his hammer on a fan, I think. Very clever.
Yeah. How about this? From July 17th to the 23rd of 1969, Paul would come into the studio about 30 minutes before the session was scheduled to begin and take a shot at the vocals on "Oh Darlin'" before the others got there. The reason was simple. Recording it in the early day gave his voice a raspy quality he was looking for. I wanted it to sound as though I'd been performing on stage all week. That's one of my favorite vocal performances. So yeah, you got to record it early in the morning. Next up, wanting to make another conceptual statement along the lines of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, McCartney and Martin fashioned the idea of a medley out of some unfinished ideas. John, on the other hand, simply wanted a traditional, unconnected album. At one point, the idea was to have John's songs on one side and Paul's on the other. But Lennon eventually gave in and contributed Sun King, Mean Mr. Mustard, and Polythene Pam to the medley, which we talked about earlier. While visiting his father, McCartney saw a piano book that contained a poem by 16th century English playwright Thomas Dekker. McCartney changed a few words, put his own melody to it, and then worked it as an existing song that he had. The original begins, "Golden slumbers kiss your eyes, smiles awake when you rise, sleep pretty wantons, do not cry, I'll sing a lullaby." So, there you go. For years, Ringo Starr had resisted all attempts by the others to get him to record a drum solo, but perhaps because it was likely to be their last record, he consented to play a 15-second drum break on the end after much prodding. Speaking of solos, the three-guitar attack that follows with George, Paul, and John in that order, each taking two bars, was recorded live in one take. That's pretty cool. And then finally, when assembling a rough mix of their medley, Her Majesty was originally tucked in, well, we just talked about this with Robert, between Mean Mr. Mustard and Polythene Pam, but McCartney decided he didn't like the song, he had it removed, but engineer John Kurlander, having never been told to throw it away, stuck it 26 seconds after the end and made it, McCartney heard it and realized he liked it that way, and it worked in that context, and it remained. So those are some things that you might not know about Abbey Road. We touched upon a few of them with Robert. So there you go. All right, if you guys want to jump in, tomorrow is the anniversary, the 50th anniversary of the release of Abbey Road. We're doing some more Beatles stuff. Do you have a favorite Beatles cover by a different band? You know, bands all over the place and artists all over the place have covered the Beatles for years. Beatles did some covers of their own as well, and we're going to get into that. We'll take a break here, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit. Did anybody watch the Colbert interview with Paul McCartney? It was Monday night. I watched it yesterday morning when I got home from work, and I thought it was amazing. I want to get your thoughts on that. If you watched the Paul McCartney interview with Stephen Colbert the other night, we're going to play a bit of audio from that, and then we're going to jump into some of the best Beatles covers of all time. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. Celebrating the Beatles this morning right here on 720 WGN. Again, talk, text 312-981-7200.
A holdup in the Bronx, Brooklyn's broken out in fights. There's a traffic jam in Harlem that's backed up to Jackson Heights. There's a scout troop short a child, Khrushchev's still wet, I'm a wild.
Car 54, where are you?
Okay, there you go. Car 54, where are you, TV theme? Because it's Wild Card Wednesday, and we can't have a Wild Card Wednesday without at least one TV theme song that gets requested. Wild Card Wednesday, yeah! So who requested the Car 54, where are you theme?
That's coming to us from Big Ed.
Big Ed. All right. Thank you, Big Ed. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Skyline Studio here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m., Steve Grzanich follows with the opening bell, and Steve Cochran is at 6. So, Monday night, Stephen Colbert had Paul McCartney on, and he was the only guest. As I said before, Colbert did his monologue, and then welcomed Paul McCartney to the show, and the entire rest of the hour was dedicated just to talking with Paul McCartney. It was a great interview, and Paul McCartney was very funny and very insightful, and Colbert's questions were intelligent and sincere, And it was just great. We have a little bit of the audio that we're gonna we want to play. He covered a lot of topics, including what we're covering right now, which would be the cover versions of songs. Both the Beatles played some covers, and then tons of artists and musicians have gone on through the years to cover Beatles songs. They talked a little bit about that. They talked about the obviously their career. They covered what it was like to, because they were in the Ed Sullivan Theater, and that's where, you know, they made their American television debut. So he talked a little bit about what it was like to be back in that theater and what an incredible, you know, event it was for them to play, and that they were nervous, that, you know, they look back at it and he said that they don't look like they're nervous, but they were nervous, and it was such a momentous occasion. And they talked about, you know, a lot of stuff, and it covered a lot because it was almost an hour long. And I just thought it was great. I really did. I thought it was one of the best interviews that that Colbert has done. So what did you guys think if you watched it? 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200 if you watched it. So, all right. We've got some audio from this. Like I said, it was almost the entire show was dedicated to Colbert interviewing McCartney. And it was just great. So, but we do have some audio that we're going to play from the interview.
You did a lot of covers. What was your favorite artist to cover? What cover did you enjoy most doing?
I think "Twist and Shout" was a great cover.
People forget that that was a cover of yours.
Yeah. People think we wrote that.
Right.
You know, we have to say no. That was the Isley Brothers. You know. I used to like doing Kansas City, Little Richard.
So that's a cover. They were talking about some of their favorite covers to do. A lot of people don't realize that, you know, like he said, and this is true. A lot of people don't realize that the Isley Brothers wrote "Twist and Shout," and for many years I thought that it was Lennon McCartney. I thought the Beatles wrote that song, and then I discovered, you know, a few years after, you know, becoming a Beatles fan and knowing the song some years after that, that it indeed was the Isley Brothers. So. We got a little more audio. What's the next cut? What are we talking about here?
So here, Paul is talking about some of his favorite covers of Beatles songs.
Okay, here we go. Yeah.
A lot of people have covered your music as well. I think "Yesterday" is the most covered song of all time, or the most recorded song of all time by various artists. Mm. Do you have a favorite cover of a Beatles song? And keep in mind, there's a correct answer.
I'd heard that the was recorded 3,000 times or something.
"Yesterday," yeah.
Yeah, so I said to one of our guys, I said, well, get me the top 10. Just what you think are the best 10. So he did, and it was like Sinatra, Elvis, Ray Charles, Marvin Gaye. I think I like Marvin's best.
Marvin Gaye's cover of "Yesterday." He did talk about how the guys do change the lyrics to "Yesterday," where they wouldn't cop to what they did. What's the next audio bit we got?
It's a little bit of him talking about that.
But you know, the funny thing about Sinatra, Marvin, and Elvis—they changed the words in the middle. I said something wrong. Now I long for yesterday. Well, all of them said, I must have said something wrong. But they're not owning up. I must have said, I don't know. Search me.
That's like those apologies that are like, if anyone was offended. Yeah, exactly. Wow.
I must have done something wrong.
The correct answer is Stevie Wonder's "We Can Work It Out." That is the best cover of Beatles song, just in case you were wondering.
And we've already got texts for that one. And we've already mentioned it. Robert mentioned it. I mentioned it as well. It's great. It's great. We're going to hear some of these bits of these covers, and some are probably never even heard before, but If you have a cover of a Beatles song that you loved, 312-981-7200. Do we have another piece of the interview here?
Yeah. Stephen took the opportunity to play back a little bit of audio of the Korean pop band BTS singing Hey Jude. And he wanted to know what Paul thought about, you know, the translatability of Beatles songs.
Yeah.
What do you think it is about your music that transcends geographic and language barriers so that those seven guys would just jump up and start the na-na-nas?
Easy lyrics?
That's true.
So there it is. It was a great interview. If you have not seen it, I know it's available online. I saw it posted on social media and on Facebook. All over the place. They split it up. I believe they split it up into four different parts because it was four different segments because, you know, there was no musical guest. There was no stand-up comedy. He only did one part of his monologue, and it was virtually, like, I would say 50 minutes of Paul McCartney being interviewed. So, yeah, it was great. It was a really, really great interview. All right, let's see. We got some people who are calling in. We're talking about Beatles covers. We're going to get to that. Artists who covers Beatles music. First of all, 773 area code says, my two favorite Beatle remakes are We Can Work It Out by Stevie Wonder and Got to Get You Into My Life by Earth, Wind, and Fire. Got to Get You Into My Life was one of the first ones that I thought of. And I also want to say that I was looking through these lists, and they don't mention Joe Cocker. I don't know how Joe Cocker was not mentioned. I have two articles in front of me. I don't know how Joe Cocker was not mentioned. Because A Little Help from My Friends is unbelievable. Like that, and that's one of Cocker's signature Came In Through the Bathroom Window. I mean, he covered a few Beatles songs and put his own voice to it. And I've got these articles about, one is from Google, or one is from Paste Magazine, one is from You Discover Music, and neither of them mentioned Joe Cocker in any capacity, which I just think is weird. He also does a great version of Come Together in Across the Universe. He does a couple of verses because that's like kind of everybody. And I also want to mention that Across the Universe is a great movie. I don't care what anybody says. I caught so much flack for giving that movie a great review, but I love that movie. And I really, really love what they did with the Beatles songs in that movie. I love every version of those songs. Especially I Want to Hold Your Hand, the way they changed it into this like really yearning, slow ballad sung by this heartbroken girl walking across a football field, beautifully choreographed. I love it. I love that movie.
My girlfriend hates that movie.
Yeah.
But she loves that rendition of the song.
It's beautiful.
And the only reason she loves the first half, she just hates the drug bits because she gets really freaked out by anything psychedelic.
Oh, I see.
But the first half, she's like, yeah, it's great.
Oh, I love that movie. I defend that movie. I will go to bat for that movie anytime. 630 area code says, Phil Collins cover of Tomorrow Never Knows. I don't know if I've heard that? 301 area code says, probably like many of the members of his generation, World War II vets, my dad was dismissive of the Beatles until later, on when he heard some of the covers by artists of his generation, and then he came to appreciate how great the songwriting was. That's interesting. That's an interesting point of view. You know, when you got like Elvis and you got Sinatra covering the Beatles, people who are a little bit older were like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe they are good. So it did turn on an entire generation. So, okay, we're going to break here. We got the news coming up, and then we'll jump right back into it. Everybody hang on. We got some phone lines open if you want to get in here at 312-981-7200 or send your text. We're going to be talking about Beatles covers right here on WGN. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in now. Any artist, any song, and a thin 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Who was that? Who requested that?
So that was Nelly Furtado.
Ah.
I'm Like a Bird, requested by the 773.
You know, I bought that Nelly Furtado album that was like her follow-up to that.
Yeah, the one produced by Timbaland.
I love that album.
Huge.
Promiscuous is a fantastic song, and I love that album. And doesn't sound anything like she did at that time. So anyway, welcome back, everybody. It's tomorrow is the 50th anniversary of the release of the Beatles' classic album, Abbey Road. So we are talking about that, and we are talking about the Beatles in general and celebrating them. But we're talking now specifically about some of the best covers of Beatles songs, because I think, as everybody knows, tons of people have covered the Beatles over the years, some not so good, some great, and some good. And that's what we're talking about, great Beatles covers right here on WGN. 312-981-7200. Here's Dave on WGN. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
I always thought that the original Hard Day's Night cover was interesting. The United Artists, the Red Album, where it shows only their eyes and their hair.
Wait, now you're talking about the album cover.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're talking about songs, cover songs of, like, other artists covering the Beatles.
Oh, but sorry.
But you like the album cover for Hard Day's Night. I gotcha. I gotcha. All right, that makes sense. That's not the kind of cover we're talking about, though. But that's cool. Thank you for listening. Here's Doc on WGN. Hey, by the way, Doc, I just want to thank you for the stuff that you sent to me and to Tom and to Vic. We all were very, very pleased with it, surprised, and thank you for your generosity, man.
Cool. Hey, I've been watching the Ken Burns documentary on country music.
Yeah.
And they were talking about when the Beatles were recording the Help album, they were looking for a song that they thought Ringo could sing and perform admirably, and they were big fans of Buck Owens, and that's how they selected Act Naturally.
Ah.
And I think he did a great job on it. And they also showed a still picture of Buck and the Buckaroos performing with Beatles wigs on. And then I think Buck and Ringo performed the song together somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I hear that. I mean, I have not watched the documentary, but I hear it's unbelievable. I hear the Ken Burns documentary that's been on recently.
I'm a little bit behind, but I bought it.
Yeah.
I bought it from PBS. But the documentary, the 5-CD set. They started with 500 songs and pared it down to 100, and then the 430-page book.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It is really good. Yeah,
Ken Burns does great stuff, no question about
it. And it's gonna, it's gonna finish tonight, and then they're gonna be replaying it. Plus, you can catch it online for a month on PBS.
Got it. All right, Doc. Thank you, sir.
All right, man.
All right, take care. There you go. Yeah, the that documentary is just, people are talking a lot about it. All right, here's Big Ed on WGN. Go ahead, Ed.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
I had two, and the first one I wrote down was Joe Cocker covering that song. I can't believe that wasn't on the list.
No, it's insane. I mean, he's done a few Beatles covers, especially Little Help from My Friends. I can't believe that wasn't mentioned in any of the articles.
Yeah. And he did it great, He kind of I don't know what kind of mood he put it into, but it was different.
Yeah.
And the other one was Elton John, Lucy in the Skies.
Yeah.
And I mentioned to Tom that John Lennon, Elton John told John Lennon, if your song Imagine goes to number one, you have to play with me. So it did, and he did, and they both did Lucy in the Skies.
Ah, okay. All right. All right, Big Ed, thanks.
Take care, buddy.
Take care, yeah. Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds by Elton John. Great cover. Great cover. His cover of Pinball Wizard, also great. Featured in that insane movie version of Tommy. So somebody said Phil Collins' Tomorrow Never Knows, and I'm trying to remember if I had heard it before. But, Tom, you were able to find... This is Tom, this is Phil Collins doing Tomorrow Never Knows.
Thank you.
not bad. That's not bad. I'm trying to remember who the band is that covers Tomorrow Never Knows for the opening credits of The Craft. I don't remember who it was. I know Love Spit Love, they covered How Soon Is Now for that soundtrack. But I'm trying to remember. It's during the opening credits of The Craft.
I believe it's Our Lady Peace.
Yeah, it's Our Lady Peace. It always makes me think of the opening of The Craft. I love this version. I think it's great.
It's very cool.
Yeah. God, I love that movie. Oh, man, do I love that movie. It's funny. I remember when Rachel True and Nev Campbell and Skeet Ulrich were all at Flashback Convention together because they had a Scream reunion. I had Rachel True on my show, and she was fantastic. She was just fantastic. So she had a Q&A at the Flashback Convention. And I remember because the Q&As are usually split up between three of us. Our good friend Steve Procopi, who reviews movies with us on Monday, he's been a host with the Flashback Convention as long as I have, back to 2002. He's been a part of it. And then Heather Wixon has been a part of it now for about, I think, 7 or 8 years. And she does a portion of the Q&As. And I remember Heather was heartbroken when I took the Q&A for Rachel True. She was heartbroken, and there was no like Nev Campbell didn't do a solo Q&A, so they just did a Scream Q&A before the screening of Scream. So the only person from The Craft that had a solo Q&A was Rachel True, and Heather was like, "You can't do that. You can't interview her. You're a man." I was a teenage girl when that movie came out, and I'm like, yeah, no, I'm doing her Q&A, but she was heartbroken because I guess that movie, you know, if for women of a certain age, that movie was like sort of a defining thing for them. But I adore that movie. God, Fairuza Balk, everybody's good in that movie, everybody. So, by the way, 773 area code says Colbert is the best interviewer of any of them. Yeah, he's terrific. 847 area code says, I loved the Colbert interview. I was so glad he spent so much time with him. They both made some profound statements about the music, and I loved it. Lulu says, you guys are making me feel old and sad, thinking about seeing the Beatles in concert in 64, and then in 72, my trip across the USA blasting Abbey Road on 8-track brings back so many memories. Stevie Ray Vaughan, I've heard this, does a cover of Taxman. And 815 area code says Across the Universe, Fiona Apple. That's a great version.
It's in Pleasantville, right?
Yeah, it was featured in Pleasantville. And find that one. I want to hear a little bit of that. And by the way, I don't know. Do you know who directed the video, right? Paul Thomas Anderson. That was when they were dating. So he directed the video. And of course, the video is brilliant because Paul Thomas Anderson directed it. Yeah, but her version is great.
Words are flowing out like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither while they pass. They slip away across the universe. Pools of sorrow, waves of joy are drifting. Possessing and caressing me.
Nothing's gonna change. That's great. It's great. Great cover. And again, the video is awesome. The video is really cool. 401 area code says, I love the movie Across the Universe 2 and everybody makes fun of me. Yeah, join the club. Here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Yeah, several years ago on the old Dr. Demento show, I heard a couple of clips. Peter Sellers did an album of Beatles covers doing various different characters. So he had Dr. Strangelove doing She Loves You, Yeah, Yeah, Yeah. And he had Laurence Olivier doing It Has Been a Hard Day's Night, and I Have Been Working Like a Dog.
Wow. So good old Dr. Demento playing that, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what else on here, but it's, I guess it's a whole album of Peter Sellers doing Beatles songs.
Maybe we'll find some of it. All right. Thanks,
okay.
John. All right. Peter Sellers in character covering the Beatles. That sounds pretty interesting. That does sound like something Dr. Demento would certainly play. Any luck finding any of it, Tom? Clearly recorded from vinyl.
Help, I need somebody, help. Not just anybody, help. You know I need someone, help.
When I was younger, so much younger than today.
What character is he doing?
I never needed anybody.
He's doing the vicar.
In any way. But now these days are gone.
Okay.
I am not so self-assured.
Okay. Now I find Peter Sellers covering the Beatles. See, everybody has covered the Beatles at some point. So, all right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll dive right back into it. What are some of the best Beatles covers of all time? And the Beatles also did some covers themselves. We'll get into that. And we're celebrating the Beatles because tomorrow is the 50th anniversary of the release of Abbey Road. So get your Beatles stories ready and your memories and your favorite songs and your favorite covers and all that stuff. Beatles talk here. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And we shall return.
I thought love was only true in fairy tales. Someone else, but not for me. Love was out to get me. That's the way it seemed. Disappointment haunted all my dreams. And then I saw her face.
So, we're doing monkeys covers as well. Who requested that?
That's coming to us from Carol.
Okay.
Smash Mouth.
Smash Mouth covering the Monkees.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Wild Card Wednesday continues. GMA Wild Card Wednesday. Here till 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Bunch of texts coming in. We are talking about Beatles covers. 630 area code says, one of my favorite cover songs is Dave Grohl singing Hey Bulldog on a Beatles tribute show. Um, 608 area code says, in the mid-90s, there was a compilation album of mostly country artists covering Beatles songs. It's called Come Together, America Salutes the Beatles. Many good songs, but my favorite was Huey Lewis singing Oh Darlin'. Huey Lewis is not a country artist. that's weird. Ben Folds with Golden Slumbers. 630 area code says, I Am the Walrus by the Flaming Lips. Those are their favorites. Let's see. Here's Dennis on WGN. Go ahead, Dennis.
Hey, what's up, dude?
Hey.
All right. Can you see me on the radio? a little joke, partner.
Right.
Listen, I wanted to tell you, let you know that the Five Stair Steps also did three of the Beatles songs, and George Harrison also worked with the Five Stair Steps too on an album called Second Resurrection. Just give you a little tidbit.
Well, what were the three songs that they covered?
They did Dear Prudence, Getting Better, and Sweet as a Peach.
Wow.
It's off the Ooh Child album.
Right, okay,
and they
cool.
did a fantastic job, man. You know, they were,
yeah, well, they were
friends
great,
of mine.
They were a great group. Great group.
Yes, they were.
All
yes,
right, Dennis, thank you, buddy.
You got it, partner.
Okay. Here are some of these, some of the ones here. Esther Phillips did a version of And I Love Her, called And I Love Him. The Beatles loved this cover, it says here. When pushed on the subject, Paul McCartney has consistently praised Esther Phillips' reading of the 1964 song And I Love Her, retitled to reverse the gender. She performed the song on the music of Lennon and McCartney, a 1965 TV showcase of their work. And he still praises her interpretation today. We got this, Esther Phillips?
And if you saw my love, you'd love him too. I love him. He gives me everything and tenderly. The kiss my lover brings.
That's pretty great. That's really great, actually. All right. Here's June on WGN. Hi, June.
Hi.
Hi.
Tom Jones did a live version of, he had an album that my mom had live in Las Vegas, and he did Hey Jude and Yesterday.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow. And it's kind of cheesy, but I like it, though.
Well, that was the thing about Tom Jones. He was kind of cheesy, but I still like him.
Yeah,
I've always liked him. My mom loves Tom Jones, man. From the 70s, when he had that variety show,
right?
After every episode, my mom would get on the phone with her best friend, and they would just talk about Tom Jones.
Oh yeah, my mom, my two sisters. I was a little too young to, you know, I didn't really care because I was a Beatles fan.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Well, okay. So Tom Jones covering Hey Jude and what was the other
and
one?
Yesterday
and Yesterday. Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. Thank you, June.
Okay, thanks.
Again, Yesterday, as we mentioned before, and as Colbert mentioned in the interview with Paul McCartney, the most covered and recorded song of all time is Yesterday. So, you know, just on that song alone, Paul McCartney could just, you know, never work again. think about how much money Paul McCartney earned from the amount of songs that he wrote that were covered, that were successful, that were purchased. I mean, seriously, it's insane. It's completely nuts. The Feelies did a cover of Everybody's Got Something to Hide Except Me and My Monkey. A full-on bar rock guitar onslaught. Every time they played it, the Feelies didn't bother with the mics when they screamed the chorus. The Feelies, I wasn't aware that the Feelies did a version of Everybody's Got Something to Hide. Junior Parker did a cover of Taxman. Mr. Blue's Languid take was sampled by Cypress Hill for I Want to Get High. But California won't be taxing that anytime soon. John Denver did a version of Mother Nature's Son. John Denver sung it on his own show in 1973, and it sounded like the Beatles had written it specifically for him. That's interesting. That's an interesting cover right there. John Denver covering Mother Nature. Do you have it? That's such a great song.
It's far out, man.
No, that's an interesting version of it. And it does sound, you know, like he should be singing it. But man, I love that song, Mother Nature's Son. God. You know, the Beatles had some pretty good songs. I don't know if you guys were aware of that or not.
Yeah, they're all right.
Not bad. Ray Charles covering Yesterday. We've talked about this. This one was mentioned a bunch of times. And Ray Charles covered a couple of other Beatles songs as well, but people really love his version of Yesterday. And how many? I mean, is there a count on how many different versions? Do they actually have a count on how many different versions there are of yesterday?
It's somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000. No one. I'm not kidding either. I was actually looking into this because Colbert did mention that in his interview with Paul.
Yeah.
And I was like, "There's no way this is the most recorded," and it actually is.
Oh yeah, I knew that. I just didn't know how many. Between 2,000 and 3,000
counts put it somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 times. It's
between 2,000 and 3,000 versions of yesterday. That's wow. That's really amazing.
It's the power of the song.
And yeah, wow. And then George, you know, has a pretty good amount of covers for something, because something got covered a ton.
When I was first learning to play the guitar, I would try to woo. Woo girls into hanging out with me because I could play something and I could play Yesterday.
Oh.
And it still worked in 2008.
Oh. All right. Well, good for you, man. You write a thank you note to Paul. All right. We're going to take a break here. And it's we are on the eve of the 50th anniversary of the release of the monumentally great album, Abbey Road. So we're celebrating the Beatles. You got a Beatles memory, a favorite song, a favorite cover? Well, you happy about Abbey Road 50 years? 312-981-7200. The news is up after this. Thundercats theme? Okay. Wildcard Wednesday continues. Who requested that?
That's coming to us from Dino.
Dino wanted to hear the Thundercats TV theme. All right. Yeah, big Wildcard Wednesday. Any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. How you doing, everybody? Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the WGN Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. as we are every weekday morning. Tomorrow marks the 50th anniversary of the release of Abbey Road, the classic album by the Beatles. So we've been talking Beatles this morning, celebrating that and sharing some Beatle memories. And right now, particularly talking about how other artists have covered the Beatles and how well they have covered them, or some of the more interesting covers. 219 area code says Fish covered the whole White Album in its entirety, Halloween 1994. So they did Revolution number 9. Oh my God! Well, you know, Lindsey Cochran, our buddy who was with Great Moments and Vinyl, they did the White Album, they performed Revolution Number 9 live.
I have to ask Engineer Adam. Maybe he knows because he's a big Fish.
Oh, he's a Fish fan. That's right. He's a huge Fish fan. By the way, speaking of Adam, I want to thank Adam Phillips for fixing my headphones a second time. As you heard, if you were listening yesterday, towards the end of the show, my left channel went out. My left headphone. And so Adam fixed it a couple of years ago when it went out, and he did it again this morning because I love my headphones.
A wizard.
He's great. He's the best. Mike in L.A. says, hey, Nick, Chet Atkins did an album called Chet Atkins Picks on the Beatles with a great version of I Feel Fine. And yes, Tom Jones' version of Hey Jude is excellent. Speaking of bands doing an album in their entirety, have you ever seen the video from the tour that Cheap Trick did when they did all of Sgt. Pepper?
No, I did hear. I know that they did it.
Yeah, I saw. I saw. It's unbelievable.
What year was that?
Oh,
sometime
early 2000s. I want to say.
Yeah,
but you know they covered the first. They actually released this. You find their cover of Magical Mystery Tour. Because it's phenomenal.
Oh, that I've definitely heard.
It's phenomenal. That. It's phenomenal. Well, they released that as a single, but the Sgt. Pepper thing was just a tour that they did. And it's out. It's the DVD is out. You can actually see it. It's great. It's really, really great. Cheap Trick, by the way, is one of my favorite bands of all time, of course. And they did the entire Sgt. Pepper album front to back, and it was fantastic. 419 area code says, you love Paul Simon doing Here Comes the Sun. Yeah. All right, let's take some more phone calls. Here's Amanda on WGN. Hi, Amanda.
Hi.
Hi.
I just want a previous caller mentioned Tom Jones. I want to also mention that Engelbert Humperdinck, a contemporary of Mr. Jones, he has a fantastic version of George Harrison's version of Something. So I hope you enjoy it if you get a chance to listen.
So Engelbert Humperdinck also covered Something.
Oh, yes, and many other of the Beatles songs.
Yeah, yeah. So. Okay, thank you, Amanda.
Thank you, bye-bye.
Okay. Wilson Pickett covered Hey Jude, which is pretty great. I've heard that before. Pretty great. Al Green, I Want to Hold Your Hand. Al Green's take, I Want to Hold Your Hand, is great. By the time Green came to record the song, the Beatles were wrapping up, and the heady days of the Ed Sullivan TV appearances were ancient history, and yet the funky soul of the Reverend that the Reverend infused into the song breathed new life into one of the Beatles' most seismic moments. So, Al Green doing I Want to Hold Your Hand. Did you find Magical Mystery Tour by Cheap Trick? Because this is fantastic. This is great. Robin Zander, God, I love that guy's voice. That's a jam. That's a great version of that song. And again, you can get the DVD of the concert where they did all of Sgt. Pepper. And they encored with, when I saw him live, they encored with that song. So they did all of Sgt. Pepper and they encored with Magical Mystery Tour. Great stuff. Here's Frank on WGN. Hi, Frank.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
Yeah, Peter Gabriel does Strawberry Fields.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, it's on an album called All This in World War II. It's kind of all different artists doing different songs, and I forget what the concept behind the album is, but it's a pretty good version of Strawberry Fields.
Can you find that one, Tom? You got that, Peter Gabriel doing Strawberry Fields?
It's with an orchestra.
Okay.
But it's still pretty good.
All right, Frank, thank you.
And I just want to mention also, Susie and the Banshees does Dear Prudence.
Yeah, no, I know Dear Prudence. I love their version of Dear Prudence.
It's really good. Yeah.
It's really good. All right, Frank. Thank you, buddy.
All righty.
All right, here's Peter Gabriel, right? Strawberry Fields.
Nothing is real. And nothing to get hung about. Strawberry Fields forever. Living is easy with eyes closed. Misunderstanding all you see. It's getting hard to be someone, but it all works out. It doesn't matter much to me. Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry.
It's good.
Fields.
Yeah. That's cool. I didn't know he covered that.
He's got away with an orchestra.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. Peter Gabriel's great. I still remember the So tour and the Us tour were unbelievable. They were two of the best shows I've seen. I saw them, touring for So, and I saw them touring for Us, and they were just two of the best concerts I've ever seen. Never got to see him with Genesis, though.
That would have been, the only time that Genesis was a band.
Like the real Genesis.
The real Genesis.
Yeah.
Not Phil Collins.
Not Abacab Genesis. Although I like Abacab. I think the poppy Genesis is fine. It's just not what that, they should have changed the name of the band.
Yeah. And I don't mind Phil Collins' solo work.
Fine. He's a master at pop songs. It's fine. And he's also one half of Easy Lover.
That's true.
Because Philip Bailey, and that's one of the greatest songs ever.
Totally. Totally.
God, I love that song. Oh. Now, you know who's one of my favorite songs of all time? Hey, Listen.
Oh, yeah.
My friend Joe. Joe loved that song.
Because Joe had impeccable music taste.
Yes, he did.
He told Al Jorgensen right to his face.
Yeah. What the hell happened after that first album? And then he told Oliver Stone, "Yeah, oh yeah, Heaven and Earth was a real treat." And by the way, at that point in because this was they were filming Natural Born Killers here, and this happened at China Club where Oliver Stone bumped into my friend Joe, my late friend Joe. Joe spilled his drink, turned around, and saw that it was Oliver Stone and says, "Hey, listen, I think you need to buy me another drink." And he was all drunk, and he said some terrible things to Joe. And then Joe goes, "Oh, yeah, Heaven and Earth was a real treat." And at that point, that was the perfect title to choose out of his filmography. Like, the perfect title to choose. Fantastic. All right, here's Richard on WGN. Hi, Richard.
Hey, enjoy the show. I got a great one for you. How about Jimi Hendrix learning Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band the week the album came out and played it in London, and the Beatles, I believe, were in the audience?
Yeah. No, that's a true story. Absolutely true story. And in fact, I've got the story right here, Richard. Listen to this, okay? There can be few greater compliments for an artist when a respected contemporary pays homage. Take this moment in June of 1967 when the Jimi Hendrix Experience opened their show at London Seville Theater, run by Beatles manager Brian Epstein, with the title track from the brand new Beatles album, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Doing so with members of the Beatles in attendance showed the Seattle guitar player to be confident as he was timely. Later on, Paul McCartney would recall, "Jimmy opened, the curtains flew back, and he came forward playing Sgt. Pepper, and it had only been released on the Thursday before."
Right.
So it was like the ultimate compliment. It was obviously a shining memory for me because I admired him so much anyway. Yeah, that's an amazing story.
Hey, getting back to what you were talking about earlier, you know, I remember reading that John Lennon had a big argument with Paul McCartney because Paul wanted Linda Eastman's family to run the Beatles business, and John wasn't in favor of that.
No,
you know,
there were a lot of issues business-wise between the Beatles that went down that led to their breakup and their demise. A lot of them. By the end, the business stuff had made it very, very difficult for them to kind of agree on anything, and that's one of them. So, Richard, thanks, man.
All right.
Okay,
have a good one.
Yep. All right. How about Stevie Wonder, "We Can Work It Out," which has been mentioned a bunch of times. When Stevie Wonder and Paul McCartney first hung out together in a London nightclub in 1966, neither of them would have predicted where their friendship would lead them. 16 years later, they would enjoy number one on both sides of the Atlantic with Ebony and Ivory. Ugh. Oh, my God, I hate that song. And in 2010, Wonder performed an infectiously funky cover of "We Can Work It Out" in front of Paul and U.S. President Barack Obama at the White House. Do we have a little "We Can Work It Out"?
We can work it out and get it straight or say goodnight. We can work it out. We can work it out. Life is very short, and there's no time for fussing and fighting, my friend. Hey, I have always thought that it's a crime. So I will ask you once again.
Try to see things my way. That's great. It's such a great version. Not Stevie Wonder, man. So, all right. We're going to take a break, and we'll come back, and we've got more covers of Beatles bands we want to talk about, Beatles songs, and Beatle history, and it is the 50th anniversary tomorrow of the release of Abbey Road, and we want to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studios here in downtown Chicago. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's Wild Card Wednesday.
Wild Card Wednesday, yeah, man, yeah.
Who requested that?
That's coming to us from Mike. The band is Nectar.
Nectar.
With a K.
Yeah. All right. By the way, Tom found out during the break, and I know now I told Vic in the newsroom that he might want to follow this. The Cardinals are still playing right now. They're playing in Arizona, and they're tied at 2, and they're in the 19th inning. Now, granted, it's earlier in Arizona than it is. I mean, they're in Arizona, right? Not in St. Louis.
Yes.
Yeah, they're in Arizona. But they're still playing. It's a 2-2 game, 19th inning. How many people are asleep in the stands, do you think, at this point?
I don't know. Yeah, it's 1:23 in the morning.
1:23 in the morning. And by the way, they have a day game tomorrow. Or I should say today. They have a day game later today. That's going to be interesting. So, yeah, in case you were wondering, the St. Louis Cardinals and the Arizona Diamondbacks are having a scalding game right now, 2-2 tie in the 19th.
Is there any way they call it, or are they're just playing it out?
No, they're
going
to continue to play, man.
Man.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the longest, the most innings played at Wrigley. I think it was like 22 or 23, something like that. But yeah, they're in the 19th inning, it would be fine if it were like 12-12. That would be kind of fun because at least they're scoring some runs. But there's only scored 4 runs total the entire game.
Yeah, that longest game was 21 innings. They lost to the Cubs lost to the LA Dodgers, and that was back in 1982.
Right, 21 innings. And by the way, they had to call that game and play it the next day because in 1982. There were no lights. They had to finish the game the next day because in 1982 there were no lights at Wrigley.
End of the 17th inning, they called it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Then they started the next day. They played like kind of a doubleheader. So, all right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We've been talking about the Beatles. Tomorrow marks the 50th anniversary of the release of Abbey Road, and we're talking about some covers that the Beatles. Some people have done. Florence and the Machine covered "Oh Darling." Florence gets loungy on this track from the Absolute Abbey Road radio station sessions recorded at the studio made famous by the Beatles. Runner-up: Bella Fleck, Bruce Hornsby, and John Cowan's versions. Bruce Hornsby does a version of "Oh Darling." I can't see that guy. Oh. Hey, they actually include Steve Martin's version of Maxwell's Silver Hammer from the movie Sergeant Pepper, which I think is hilarious that they include it. The Pixies covered "Wild Honey Pie." Well, you got to find that. Nobody harmonizes their screams quite like Frank Black and Kim Deal. This is a cover only in the loosest sense of the word. Oh, this should be good. Yeah, this should be good. So the Pixies covering "Wild Honey Pie." That's the Pixies, all right.
That's awesome. Oh, my God. That's amazing. I don't even want to listen to the original anymore.
Oh, that's funny, man. Ben Harper covered "Strawberry Fields Forever." Didn't know that. Echo and the Bunny Men covered "Ticket to Ride." Uncut released a CD with 24 Beatles covers, but it's Echo and the Bunnymen song that stuck with us. Echo and the Bunnymen? "Ticket to Ride." Wow. That's got to be a little weird. Do we have that? Good. You know, the other thing about all these covers that we're talking about and playing is that they're great songs. So it's like, unless you really screw it up, covering a Beatles song is going to be pretty successful on many levels because they're great, great, great songs. So, yeah, unless you really, really mess it up bad, it's probably going to end up fine. And that's a great, because Ticket to Ride is a great song. We talked about Earth, Wind, and Fire's Got to Get You Into My Life, which is just really, really great. The Langley Schools Music Project covered The Long and Winding Road. It's a child chorus, and it was recorded back in the 1970s. It became a cult hit in around 2001 online, and for good reason. The Langley School Music Project. So it's a child's choir taking on a bunch of pop songs. And they did a version of The Long and Winding Road. So, cool. All right, more Beatles talk on the eve of the 50th anniversary of Abbey Road. We want to hear from you guys, your favorite Beatles songs, memories, favorite covers. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right, the news is coming up right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It is a Wednesday morning, Wildcard Wednesday. Give me a Wildcard Wednesday. That's any artist, any song. Who requested the Oingo Boingo?
That's coming to us from Bruce.
All right, Bruce. A little Oingo Boingo there with the great Danny Elfman. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to join us. Tomorrow marks the 50th anniversary of the release of Abbey Road, which, of course, is a great, great album by the Beatles. So we've been talking and celebrating the Beatles this morning. And now we're talking about other artists who have copied the Beatles, covered the Beatles, and talking about some of those great versions of those songs. So let's see. Here is Diane on WGN. Hi, Diane.
Yeah, hi, Nick. Hi. How are you?
All right. What's up?
I just want to mention, first of all, Echo and the Bunnymen are from Liverpool.
Oh, okay.
So they kind of have a right to that song.
Sure, sure.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the interview, which I watched myself the other night that it was on.
Just to remind people who maybe have just tuned in, Stephen Colbert had Paul McCartney on Monday night. I watched it yesterday morning when I got home from work, and I thought it was great. He dedicated almost the entire hour to just Paul McCartney, and I thought it was great. So you watched it, Diane. What did you think?
Oh, yeah, and I highly recommend people watch it. But what really struck me was how sweet and genuine he was. And he was almost amazed that he almost saw himself as two different people, you know, the famous guy. And then the guy that he really was,
yeah,
you know, with the grandchildren and the children's book and all that kind of stuff. And
right.
That's what really impressed me. And the story about sneaking in the movie theater,
yeah,
and watching that movie yesterday.
Yeah.
I thought, what a great little story that was.
Absolutely. Snuck in the back, sat in the back of the theater and watched it. Because obviously, you know, you can't walk down the street if you're Paul McCartney and not be recognized by everybody on the
planet.
How
do you even get out of there?
Yeah, exactly.
Without anybody seeing them.
Yeah, exactly. No, it was a really great interview, and I'm a big Beatles fan, and Paul is my favorite Beatles, so it was really fun, and it was especially fun to watch Stephen Colbert, who so clearly loves Paul McCartney and the Beatles, like really do a good job with that interview. It was really great.
Well, you know, we really have to treasure Paul because he's really kind of all we have left.
of the Beatles, because Ringo doesn't really do Beatles stuff.
Right.
And you don't really see him anywhere. So, and Paul really gets into it. And he's always very present, it seems. So, you know, we really got to treasure him and hope he lives, you know, another 10 or 12 years or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Exactly. All right,
Keep him going.
Thanks, Diane.
All right, bye now.
There you go. And here's one that I need to hear. This is The Breeders. So we get to hear a little more Kim Deal. The Breeders covered Happiness is a Warm Gun.
I adore this cover.
Really?
Oh, my God, yeah. It's so good.
Okay.
It's so, so good.
Well, I mean, obviously I love The Breeders, clearly. But I didn't know they did a cover of Happiness is a Warm Gun. And evidently it's great. According to this little article that I've got in front of me, it's really, really terrific. And, of course, Tom, you like it already.
She's well acquainted with the touch of a velvet hand, like a lizard on a window pane. Man in the crowd with the multicolored mirrors on his hobnail boots. With his eyes while his hands are busy working overtime. The soapy passion of his wife, which he ate and donated to the National Trust.
Yeah, that's good. That's real good.
It's so cool.
Very, very cool. Now, hold on a second. The Jam did And Your Bird Can Sing. Did you know that?
Did not.
Paul Weller put his Rickenbacker to good use with this slightly sped up version of And Your Bird Can Sing. Oh, wait, the Jam sped up a song? Really? They did. And Your Bird Can Sing, The Jam. Do we have that?
Tell me that you got everything you want. And your bird can sing, but you don't get me. You don't get me. You say this, you say I'm the one.
That's good. That's certainly the Jam. No question. You know, Buffalo Tom covered Going Underground. Have you heard their version?
Yeah, you showed it to me a while back.
And they slowed it down.
Yeah.
So they took a Jam song and slowed it down.
Well, but I'd be terrified if they went any faster.
I love that cover. I think it's great. But again, I love everything that Buffalo Tom does. Here's Marvin on WGN. Hi, Marvin.
Hey, I just want to say, Nick, I listen to you every morning at work. I'm in Tampa, Florida. I listen on my way to work, and I'm a little sleepy. Last night, I was in Clearwater, Ruth Eckert Hall. There's a tour going around the country called It Was 50 Years Ago Today. It's a tribute to the White Album, which is actually 51 years, but, you know, it doesn't have the same ring to it.
Yeah.
But it's Todd Rundgren, Mickey Dolenz. You got Joey Mullen from Badfinger, who actually played with the Beatles and was produced by Paul McCartney, and he was on the Bangladesh. Then you got Christopher Cross and Jason Scheff from Chicago. So they come out and do songs from the White Album and do some of their own songs. And you got Todd Rundgren, what a rock star. I mean, he's still amazing. He sounds great. He did Helter Skelter. I think that was one of the highlights of the show. You got Mickey was doing Rocky Raccoon, and in the middle when he does a doo 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 doo, it sounds just like a monkey song. And it was an amazing show. And of course, you know, Badfinger, all Joey Mullen from Liverpool, sounds just like the Beatles. And you know, the Beatles music is just, it's everywhere. And I've been watching the Ken Burns documentary on country music, and they do a segment on Ringo covering Buck Owens' Act Naturally.
Right.
Now, Buck was a Beatles fan.
Right.
And Beatles did Buck Owens. Buck says young people started coming to my show.
Yeah. our one of our regular listeners, Doc, he called in earlier and told us about that scene in the country music documentary.
But if the 50 years ago today comes to Chicago, I know it's in Cleveland Saturday night. It was here in Clearwater, Florida last night. It's a once-in-a-lifetime amazing show. Even Christopher Cross is enjoyable. That's how good the show is.
He didn't do sailing, did he?
Yes, he did, oh, but it's the perfect time. You know, you got to go to the bathroom sometime.
Thank you, Nick.
All right. Love your show.
I listen
to you every morning from Tampa, Florida on my way to work.
I appreciate it, Marvin. Thank you very much.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
Take care. Everybody's got to pee. See, you pee during sailing. Christopher Cross busted out. You know, if he busted out the theme from Arthur, too, I would go right to the can. You remember the theme from Arthur?
Yeah.
When you get trapped between the moon and New York City.
just an update. Diamondbacks win 3-2.
Oh!
19 innings. Yeah, bottom of the 19th.
Oh,
they take it home.
Oh, man. That's too bad. I was hoping the game would go on until Thursday.
I wanted to see if it would go until the end of the show.
Yeah, that would have been funny.
Fun.
Well, it's a quick turnaround, though, man. You know? So it's almost 2 o'clock in the morning there, and they got a game in 12 hours. So that's, you know, not very good. But that actually reminds me of one of my favorite, you know, one of my favorite stories. One of my favorite teams of all time in baseball were the 93 Phillies. Because they were predicted to end up like in fifth place that year in 93. They ended up going to the World Series and turning out to be one of the best teams in baseball. The reason I love that team so much is because they were just a bunch of sort of fat, drunk goofballs, the 93 Phillies. And so, yeah, John Kruk was on that team, Lenny Dykstra, Inca Velia, my main man Mickey Morandini was on that team. And they were just a group of characters. They would walk out with their, you know, with their jerseys untucked, and John Kruk would have a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, and, you know, like a bunch of them were kind of fat and out of shape. And so there were so many great, hilarious stories about that season, but one of my favorites of the 93 Phillies was they had a game that went extra innings. It was a night game that went extra innings. Went really long, well into the night, not unlike what just happened in Arizona. So it went really, really long, and they had a doubleheader the next day. You know, that like started like at noon. And so the game goes well into the night. They end up winning the game, and then they a bunch of the guys just go like, I'm not going home. Why should I go home? So they went back into the clubhouse. They ordered a bunch of booze and a bunch of beer and a bunch of pizzas. It was Inca Velia, Dykstra, Dalton, Kruk, Morandini, and I think one or two other guys. They stayed. So they just drank a bunch of beer and a bunch of booze. They ate a bunch of pizza. They slept in their uniforms. They were in their uniforms. They slept in the clubhouse in their uniforms. Got up the next day in the without showering in the uniforms that they slept in. And like the people started to come in, you know, the staff started to come in, and there was beer everywhere, beer bottles all over the place, and booze, pizza boxes strewn all over. And the 93 Phillies, those guys from the 93 Phillies, just sprawled out sleeping in their uniforms, you know, drunk. And so they wake up. And don't change. They go out and they play a doubleheader, except for John Kruk, who was too hungover to play the first game, but he went 3-for-4 in the second game. they split the doubleheader. They lost the first game, but they won the second one. I love that story. And to me, that's one of the things about like that's old school baseball. Cause I mean, you go back to a guy like Babe Ruth who would get drunk every night and eat 55 hot dogs and he would still play. That's what the throwback to the 93 Phillies was. Another one of my favorite stories is John Kruk is before a game, and he's walking. I also love the story about how John Kruk retired. You know, he retired as a White Sox.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, he retired. He got a single, got to first base, retired right there. Walked off. They put in a pinch runner, retired because he wanted to beat the traffic. That's John Kruk, man. John Kruk.
Oh,
so
wow.
Anyway, Kruk is walking by the dugout, and it's before the game, so there are a bunch of kids and stuff, you know, with balls and baseball cards to be signed by the players. So he's got a cigarette hanging out of his mouth. He walks up to this kid. He's got a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, and he's signing the ball, and I guess it was the kid's mother or an adult woman who says to him, hey, you shouldn't be smoking like that. You're an athlete. And he goes, without a beat, he goes, lady, I'm not an athlete. I'm a baseball player. 93 Phillies, man.
Oh, man.
I was rooting for them to go all the way that year. I was rooting for them to go all the way that year. They didn't. And, of course, it had to do with an ex-Cub. Mitch Williams gives up a dinger to Joe Carter, and they lose the World Series. Joe Carter, Toronto Blue Jays win the World Series that year. I was so mad. I was rooting for the 93. Because, again, at the beginning of the season, Sports Illustrated was like, they're going to end up in fifth place. They're terrible. Look at these guys. They're a bunch of jamokes. You know, and then they end up going to the World Series and real close to winning it. And stupid Mitch Williams, wild thing, comes in, ex-Cub. So, but anyway, I love the 93 Phillies. They're fantastic. Okay, we got to take a break here. We got some weather. And then when we come back after the break, we're going to wrap up the Beatles talk. And I've got some talk about some some very valuable things that were destroyed. Priceless things and the morons who destroyed them. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Priceless things and the morons who destroyed them. And also, we have another edition of Know Your Onion coming up after the 4:30 news. So stick around for that. And again, you have to know the difference between real news headlines and onion news headlines, and it gets really hard. We'll take two phone callers to be our two contestants, and each will play a full round with Tom, and you won't go home empty-handed either way. But know your onion, know your news headlines from the real from the fake. That's all coming up. All right, it's timely. Wildcard Wednesday. You mean Wildcard Wednesday night? Wednesday night. Well, tonight, I should say, that TV show's theme, that TV show comes back. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Who requested that?
It's coming to us from Kim and Skokie.
Kim and Skokie. Obviously a fan of Sunny. How can't you be? Hey, coming up at 6 o'clock, Steve Cochran has your morning drive right here on WGN. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, we're talking about the Beatles. Tomorrow, it's the 50th anniversary of the classic album Abbey Road. So we were talking about Abbey Road. We had Robert Rodriguez in a little bit earlier, a Beatle expert, an author, and the host of a terrific podcast called Something About the Beatles. And if you missed the interview, later this morning, the podcast will be put up, and I suggest, if you're a Beatles fan especially, I highly suggest that you give it a listen, because he knows more about the Beatles than just about anybody I've ever interviewed, and he's brilliant and knows everything and adds insight and has facts and knowledge. And we talked about Abbey Road and all kinds of other great Beatles related stuff. Also, I would suggest that you look for Stephen Colbert's interview with Paul McCartney from Monday Night Show, because it's really great. Really, really great. So celebrating some of the Beatles stuff here. I also do want to mention, since we're talking about anniversaries, today's a sad one. On this date, September 25th, 1980, John Bonham died, the great drummer from Led Zeppelin. It was booze and drugs and all kinds of stuff that took him. He was only 32 years old. And so on this date, John Bonham died. One of the greatest drummers in the history of rock, if not the greatest rock drummer of all time. He passed away, and that was a real sad, sad time. And then they canceled their 1980, the rest of their 1980 tour. Let's remember John Bonham, blast a little Zeppelin later on this morning. It was almost 40 years ago. So then he passed away. All right. Let's get back to talking some Beatles. Here's Carrie on WGN. Hi, Carrie.
Hey, morning, Nick.
Hey.
excuse me. Frog in my throat early. If you ever see him come to town, one of the best concerts we ever saw was, they're called the Fab Four.
Yeah, I've heard of them. I've never seen them, but I've heard of them.
Yeah, they're led by Will Lee. And I was talking to Tom. I think that the rest of the guys kind of rotate. And I think Rick Nielsen does play with them occasionally, but it's always Will Lee.
Yeah.
They don't do a lot of shows, but we found at the Chicago Theater. Just we were walking by. I'd never heard of them. And we walked in, and they did the entire White Album in order.
Yeah.
They had a break between the two LPs, and then at the end, it was a long concert, obviously. And then at the end, they did just some older songs. And if... if anybody ever sees them, highly, highly recommend it. They're really good. Willie, of course, he's obviously a great bass player.
Yeah.
So it was unexpectedly great because I never heard of them, and it was freezing cold out, and we walked right in front of the Chicago Theater, saw the marquee, and we're like, hey, we like the Beatles, let's go. And it was awesome.
That's great. That's great. No, I've heard they're great. And Willie, obviously, you know, was in Paul Schaefer's band. The most dangerous band in the world.
Most dangerous band in the world, yeah.
That played for Letterman for so many years. But yeah, I've heard they're fantastic. There's another Beatles cover band that play Beatlefest every year that are really great. They're called American English. And if you ever get a chance to see those guys, they're tremendous.
I can cut mine. Sounds cool.
All right, Kerry, thanks, man.
Take care.
You've seen American English?
Oh, they used to come to Crystal Lake like yearly.
Yeah,
yearly, and they were always so much fun. They dress up, they do the whole thing.
Yeah, and they play Beatlefest every year. They just played this past year. They've been playing Beatlefest. They've got to be playing Beatlefest for like it's got to be like 35, 40 years. They've been playing Beatlefest, and they're great. It was always one of the highlights of the weekend was the Saturday night concert that American English would put on during Beatlefest. So. But speaking of Oingo Boingo, we had a request earlier for Oingo Boingo. They covered I Am the Walrus. I need to hear that. There's no way that I don't want to hear that. Oingo Boingo with the great Danny Elfman covering I Am the Walrus. That seems like that could be a very, very interesting cover. And they say here, we can't imagine anyone else covering this better than Danny Elfman. Well, they did a great version of Bono, did a great version of it in Across the Universe. Got great version. Bono's hilarious in that movie, by the way.
Yeah, he's Dr. Robert.
Dr. Robert. He's hilarious in that movie. What do we got here?
I am he as you are me, and we are all together. The bloody Tuesday man, you've been a naughty boy, you let your face go long. I'm the Eggman.
Woo!
Yeah, I'm the Eggman.
Woo!
I'm the Walrus.
Cuckoo, ca-choo, man. That's great. Again, that's a great song. As I said before, unless you really screw it up, your cover's going to be good. You know why? Because these songs are great.
I'm trying to think, are there any really bad Beatles covers?
I don't know, unless somebody covered Revolution Number 9.
We can't talk about that song,
I know,
man.
All right, I want to close this out with Amy Mann and Michael Penn covering Two of Us. I got to hear this. So, Amy Mann and Michael Penn. This track makes us think that the married couple will do just fine giving up their solo careers. The song brings us so much joy. It's the best track on the Beatles tribute I Am Sam soundtrack. So it was in the movie I Am Sam. Sean Penn, and that soundtrack's great because it also features it's all different artists covering the Beatles, and it features Eddie Vedder's unbelievable version of You Gotta Hide Your Love Away, which is awesome. But this is Two of Us, Amy Mann and Michael Penn.
Two of us riding nowhere, spending someone's hard-earned pay. You and me Sunday driving, not arriving on our way back home. On our way home. On our way home. We're going home.
Yeah, they're great together. I love both of those people very much. All right, there you go. Happy anniversary to Abbey Road turning 50 tomorrow. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we got the news on 720 WGN. Yeah. Book 'em, Dano. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WG and Wildcard Wednesday continues. It's any artist, any song, anything. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Who requested the Hawaii 5-0 theme?
It's coming to us from Sam.
Sam wanted to hear some Hawaii 5-0. Fan of Jack Lord and his hair.
It's good hair.
Great hair. Fantastic hair. All right, welcome back, everybody. It is a Wednesday morning, and I'm here till 5 a.m., as I am every weekday morning. And Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive to get you through the morning here on WGN, as we do every day. Okay, so we are going to talk about priceless things and the total morons who destroyed them. And I also want to invite you guys to call in or text in with some collectible stuff that you guys collect or that you know people who collect. Did you ever watch the Antiques Roadshow?
I was a little addicted to it for a while.
Yeah.
Especially when I was unemployed out of school.
Sure.
I was like, well, I got nothing to do except apply for jobs and watch Antiques Roadshow.
Antiques Roadshow is addictive.
It's a lot of fun.
It is, man. And I my favorite is when they come in. I know this really is going to sound like I'm a jerk, but my favorite is when people come in and go, yeah, this thing, I've been told it's worth like, you know, $900,000. And it's like, yeah, it's worth $25.
Yeah, I've got this haunted doll with the souls of 1,000 men in it. What can I get for this?
Yeah. Yeah. It's but then when weird. Someone comes in with something that's like, yeah, this was in the garage for a bunch of years. I just, what the hell? Oh, yeah, this could be worth at least $50,000. What? That was the suspense of watching Antiques Roadshow. So maybe you guys collect some stuff. Maybe it's not worth anything. I don't know. Have you ever gone to a place and had it appraised? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. I like it when we have Michael Osaki on, and he's our sports memorabilia expert. And then, like, you know, when somebody finds out that it's worth more than they thought, and they go, whoa, like on the other end of the phone. But these things are worth a lot, these things that got destroyed. And here's the again, this is from cracked.com, and so they have a tendency to be smart alecky in their writing style. And so here's the intro. It says, look, accidents happen, we get that. You trip, you break something, you fix it, or you replace it, no big deal. But imagine if you're bumbled into something truly consequential, historically important, and priceless. That's what happened to these poor saps, whose faces are now probably twisted into a permanent cringe. There's literally no living these down. Okay, here we go. This is if you've ever destroyed something, maybe you guys have destroyed something that was valuable and you were like, uh-oh. Accidents do happen, but here are some goofy ones. In 2014, a French museum guard who needed to take a break sat down on a nearby folding chair. It was a 200-year-old chair used by Napoleon himself. Was because the guard broke the leather by sitting down on it. Although the chair was later restored, the guard got a disciplinary hearing during which we were told he was very carefully told where to sit. By the way, I'm trying to, you know, first of all, it's a 200-year-old chair. Okay? And he was in a museum. Don't you want to make sure that if you're in a museum where many valuable things are, that you're not going to, you know, screw something up? But also, if it was a chair that was used by Napoleon, it didn't necessarily have to be sturdy. Napoleon was not a big dude. You know what I mean? So, that's the first one. By the way, just to let you guys remind you guys, at 4:30 during the 4:30 news, we're going to ask for you guys to call in at 312-981-7200 to be a part of our latest round of Know Your Onion. That's where two people will call in. They will play separate rounds each, and Tom will be your host, and he will read you news headlines, and you have to guess whether it's a real news headline or a headline from The Onion, the fake news paper that does satirical, funny headlines. Real news in the real world is so weird now you can't tell the difference sometimes. So that's the deal. Know Your Onion, and we want you guys to call in during the 4:30 news, and we'll jump right into it afterwards. Okay, we got a text. 847 area code says, my wife and I started collecting Funko Pops in 2014. We have 1,100 of them today. Never was in it for the money, but I bought one for $15. I sold it for $1,100 last year. $1,100.
Good for you.
For a Funko Pop?
Yeah, those things get rare.
I've got five of them. I'm sorry, six of them. And they're all out of the package, so I don't care. One of them is my future ex-wife, Dana DiLorenzo. They did a Kelly Maxwell.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
I've seen that one in the office.
It's not in the office, at home.
Oh, of course.
I'm not going to leave. my future ex-wife stays home with me.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, Dana, they made a Kelly Maxwell one.
That's awesome.
And then I've got one here in the office. That's Carl from Caddyshack.
Yeah, I've seen him.
And then the other four are at home right on my coffee table. And it's the Doof Warrior, Imperial Joe, Furiosa, and Mad Max.
That must-haves.
Yeah. But I don't know if they're... I don't care if they're worth anything. I think they're cool, and I just have them.
Mm-hmm.
So
they've exploded in popularity.
Yeah, they have. No, they're... I mean, listen, you know, I remember when they first started popping up in the vendor's room at Flashback a few years ago, and now every single table has the Funko Pops. And that's, in fact, where I got the Mad Max. Our good friend, the mayor, Don, who works at the Crown Plaza Hotel and basically runs all the technical, all the lights, the sound, the Q&As. He organizes everything. He's worked for the Crown Plaza, you know, for special events. I mean, every day they have, you know, conferences and they have gatherings and stuff like that. And he's the guy who's basically in charge of all the ballrooms and all the activities that happen in the hotel. He bought them for me. He was like, "Hey, come on, I want to get you some Funkos." And I'm like, "All right." So I got four from the Mad Max movies, and I want to thank the mayor, Mayor Don. Okay, so here's another priceless thing that was destroyed by a moron at Milan City Council's 2013 Christmas party. One guest got kind of careless, opening a bottle of wine. City official Roberto Casago aimed it at pretty much the worst possible spot. An 18th century painting, and then the cork ripped an inch wide hole into the canvas. But before experts could get their hands on the painting, the hole was covered with tape, an idea that sprang from the same level of judgment that Casago showed. An 18th century painting, cork goes flying through it. How about this one? In 2013, a Belizean construction company needed limestone to build a road. They helped themselves to a nearby Mayan temple. Archaeologists saved a few artifacts, but the 23,000-year-old structure was demolished. A prominent Belizean archaeologist said that hearing about it was like being punched in the stomach. The company's fee was $24,000.
Oh my God!
2,300-year-old structure. Here's Robert on WGN. Hi, Robert.
You know, Nick, we used to, you know, like you used to go out and play with your Hot Wheels tracks.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we were up in my grandpa's attic, and we found a couple of very huge swords.
Oh boy!
And we got them into the backyard, and we're talking like, I don't know, 6-foot swords, okay?
Yeah.
And we're trying to, you know, we're kids. So we're swording with each other, whatever the hell you call it. We couldn't even pick these things up, but we had them in the back. Yeah, they were from the Robert the Bruce era.
Oh, my God.
From 1259.
And you guys were just outside smacking them around.
Oh, we're outside beating the hell out of these things, you know. and oh, my God, it's the first time I ever got horse whipped.
Yeah. Wow, that's exactly what we're talking about here, Robert. That's some very similar stories to what we're talking about here.
Yeah, so these are things that, like, I still own to this day. That's how I was named after, and the scolding you get.
Yeah,
these are great. You know, and you're keep going, dude. No, they're fun.
Yeah. All right, Robert. Thanks, man.
All right, that was great.
I didn't know that they were antique swords and go outside and smacking them around on the sidewalk and stuff.
My dad would have tanned my hide.
Oh, yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Robert the Bruce era, my God.
Yeah, he'd have killed you.
Oh, yeah. With the sword.
With the actual sword. You see what these real swords are capable of, pal? Okay. We were talking more about priceless things that were destroyed by morons. And so far, we've got a few here, and we got a bunch more to talk about. We want to hear from you also about collectibles as well. And what you collect or what your friends collect, if they're worth anything, or if you've destroyed something like antique swords from Robert the Bruce era. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the WGN Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here on a Wednesday morning, Wild Card Wednesday.
You may Wild Card Wednesday.
That's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. What was that? I recognized it, but I couldn't place my who requested that.
So that was
Was that from a movie?
It's been used in movies before, I believe. It's Giorgio Moroder.
Right.
Chase. And that was requested by Steve.
Yeah, Giorgio Moroder, who did the music for Scarface.
Yes.
Among other things.
A legendary electronic composer and artist.
Yeah.
He was
Cat People.
He did Cat People. Cat People.
Yeah. And he produced and was responsible for the David Bowie version, the slow version of Cat People that was used in the Paul Schrader movie.
Yep, yep.
Yeah.
And Inglourious Basterds, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
It gets used there.
Yeah. Yeah, Cat People is definitely in Inglourious Basterds. Yeah. Man, I remember when Nastassja Kinski was, oh my God. She was everything, Nastassja Kinski, when I was in high school. That legendary, have you ever seen the legendary poster, Nastassja Kinski, mm-hmm. with the snake?
Yep, yep.
Oh, man. All right. Hey, we are talking about priceless things that total morons destroyed. And we are also opening it up to talk a little bit about some collectible stuff. If you collect something, if you did a antiques roadshow kind of thing and found out maybe it was worth nothing, who knows? I'm sorry, I'm looking at the screen. They're showing the game highlights from the game last night. Cubs game. Five errors, by the way. All right, here we go. In 2002, the TSA decided that famous Polish pianist Christian Zimmerman's custom Steinway grand piano was probably a bomb because its glue smelled like a bomb to them, so they promptly demolished it. Zimmerman then shipped his pianos in parts whenever he toured the U.S., but tried shipping the whole one in 2006, the TSA held it for 5 days, ruining his tour schedule. All that turned Zimmerman into a harsh critic of U.S. foreign policy, and he now refuses to play in the U.S. Well, who could blame him? Remember the scene in Pink Panther Strikes Again? Where he's got the mace stuck on his hand?
Yeah.
Peter Sellers got the mace stuck on his hand. And first of all, you must be the beekeeper. And he smashes the beekeeper with the end of the mace. And then there's a fly in the room. So he tries to swat the fly with the mace and demolishes the piano. And so they go, oh, that is a priceless Steinway. And he goes, not anymore. That's what I'm picturing the TSA guy is saying.
Not anymore.
In the 18th century, Shakespeare's last home drew hordes of tourists, driving its owner crazy. One of the biggest attractions was a mulberry tree planted by Shakespeare himself, and the owner, Francis Gastrell, chopped it up and used it for firewood. Oh my God! The townspeople chased him out of town for that, but demanded he keep paying taxes on the house. Out of spite, Gastrell raised the house to the ground. Oh my God! You know, it's funny when my buddies and I were on our baseball trip all those years ago. We were in Baltimore, and of course, the first thing we did when we got to Baltimore was we went to Edgar Allan Poe's grave. That was the first thing we did. First thing we did, you know, even though it was a baseball trip, first thing we did when we got to D.C.,
Exorcist steps.
First thing we did when we went to Baltimore, Poe's grave. And it's really cool because there's a monument to him that's in front of the church. That's not the grave. You got to go around the back of the church to see his actual burial, where the grave is. But there's a big monument in front. A lot of people think that's it. When they go and visit, go, oh, there it is. No, you got to go around the back of the church. But anyway, while we were there, we went to, you know, we had like a day to kill because that's why we were in D.C. And then we came into Baltimore. It was a night game, so we had like a full day to kill. This was the inaugural year of Camden Yards, which is a beautiful, it still is a beautiful park. But anyway, so we went to Babe Ruth's house, like the house that literally Babe Ruth was born in.
Was he home?
No. So we get in and it's this, you know, sort of, it's on this, you know, like side street. And it was a you know, very humble little place. It had two floors. You walk in and you see like there's the kitchen, and they tried to, you know, they tried to restore it to what it was like, you know, back in the day, you know, when Babe Ruth was either a kid or born, and so those were all that's what they tried to do. But the thing about it, like visiting Babe Ruth's house, like all these people who visited Shakespeare's house, driving these people crazy, nobody lived there. It became like a museum. So nobody was actually living in the house. And the interesting thing about Graceland was people lived there until recently. So like all these years that they've been doing tours of Graceland, there were people upstairs, like living there, relatives and stuff upstairs living there.
That's wild.
Yeah. But anyway, this was not the case of the Babe Ruth house. But I will tell you this. Somebody did move in. We walk in. Almost the entire first floor, like the living room downstairs and like part of the kitchen and this part, was all dedicated to Cal Ripken. Cal Ripken, 1992, you know, was like the top player on the Orioles at that time. So we walk in and it's all Cal Ripken stuff. Like it's like gloves and bats, you know, uniforms, pictures, videos, highlights, all over the place. And I'm like, Cal Ripken, like, just kind of moved in and took over Babe Ruth's house? The place where Babe Ruth was born? And the first thing you see when you walk in is a massively large monument to Cal Ripken? And the killer of it was, because they had people there, you know, you had to pay an admission to get in, so they had employees there, and they had people guarding things, you know, in case some idiot sat on a Napoleon chair, you know. You go upstairs and see the room in which he was born, which was really cool. But in order to do that, you had to get past this massive, ridiculous tribute to Cal Ripken. And I have nothing against Cal Ripken. In fact, I've interviewed Cal Ripken, and he's a wonderful guy, and he was a great baseball player, no question about it. But this is a Babe Ruth's house. I mean, I know Cal Ripken was a hugely popular player in Baltimore, but come on. So anyway, but the killer part of it is, in the shadow boxes that they have all over the downstairs area with the displays, there was an interactive part where you could press a button and a video would play with like highlights of Cal Ripken's career. And every time you press it, it would just immediately go to Carly Simon going, "Nobody does it better," and sing the song while the highlights are going on. And while we were there, we were probably there for, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes, you know, just because, like I said, it's not really big. And we're just checking out the rooms and stuff. We must have heard Nobody Does It Better 800 times. People walk in, oh, press the button, Nobody Does It Better. And I can't imagine being an employee of that place. You would have to hear, nothing against Carly Simon. It's actually, I think, one of the best Bond songs of all time. I don't want to hear it 50,000 times a day while I'm working. That's why, like, you know, like if you work at a Walgreens or a Jewel or something, this time of year is not great because the Halloween decorations that make noise and sounds and stuff, that's all people do is press that whole aisle. Oh, and by the way, you're going to be introduced to Count Fartula and Fartenstein.
I've heard the legends.
Yeah. They'll come out sometime in the week next week.
Oh boy.
We will bring out Fartenstein and Count Fartula.
Woo!
And the sound effects CD with the screaming dude. Those are yearly traditions during Halloween on the Nick DiGilio show. So Anyway, all right, we're talking about more items, priceless things that are totaled by morons, collectibles and all that cool stuff. But before we get back to that conversation, right now we want to get a couple of people ready to go and play a round of Know Your Onion. This is when you have to know the difference between a fake news headline from The Onion and a real news headline. Tom will read them to you. We'll get the first two people in at 312-981-7200 will be our contestants. So get in here now. First two people in will be our contestants for Know Your Onion. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Call right now to be one of the two contestants that we get here on 720 WGN. News is up after this.
She got the gold mine. She got the gold mine. I got the share.
I got the share.
They split it right down the middle, and then they give her the better half. Well, it all sounds sort of funny, but it hurts too much to laugh.
She got the gold mine.
That's right, man. Jerry Reed. Jerry Reed. She got the gold mine, and I got the shaft. All right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. All right. We have our two contestants here, and we're going to play a round of Know Your Onion. This is when you hear Tom, who is your host, read some news headlines, and you have to figure out whether they're real or whether from the satirical comedy news paper, The Onion. So you just have to guess real or onion. If you get a majority of five correct, you win, but you won't go away empty-handed. So shall we get the band and the 60,000 visitors in here?
It's time to Know Your Onion!
Yeah. All right. Yeah, the news is weird nowadays, folks, so we thought we would come up with a game where you have to guess whether a news headline is real or it's from The Onion. Are we ready to go, Tom?
I should say so.
Okay, here is Maureen on WGN. Maureen's in Tinley Park. Hi, Maureen.
Good morning.
Morning. Do you know what The Onion is, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So you just have to figure out whether these news headlines are real or from The Onion. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. All right, Tom, let's start.
All right, Maureen, let's get a little music going here. Okay. Your first headline, Maureen, school shooting hoodies with bullet holes land fashion company in hot water. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I gotta guess real.
Let's see here. Very real.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I saw the hoodies. I couldn't believe this was a real thing.
Well, it's going to certainly get them a little news coverage.
Yeah.
But you got one there, Maureen.
Great, great sensitivity with that company. That's fantastic. Okay, you got one right, Maureen. Here we go.
Yay!
All right, next up, let's hop over to some sports. FIFA unveils strict new rule limiting fans to 5 racist chants per game. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Onion.
Showing.
Very good. Yes, that is thankfully The Onion.
Yeah, thankfully that is The Onion. And I can tell that you're a soccer fan because some people say FIFA.
Oh, God. Get a grip.
All right, you get one more right and you'll have a clean sweep, Maureen.
Okay.
Okay, here we go.
All right, your next headline, Maureen. Pope Francis criticizes overuse of adjectives. Is that real or is that The Onion?
The Onion.
Let's see.
That's real?
That is very real. The Pope shared his thoughts on the language, and it was in the Guardian.
Okay.
He doesn't like it when people are too verbose, I suppose.
Okay. All right. I got other things. I think other things there should be more concern with than somebody using too many adjectives. I don't know. All right, Maureen, you still got two more chances to get one more right.
Okay.
All right.
All right, let's see. Let's go over to a little bit of climate news. In Japan, make climate fight sexy, says Japan's new environment minister. Is that real or is that The Onion?
The Onion.
Let's see.
No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
I guess that's a no.
Yeah.
No, that is not the Onion. The Japan's new environment minister thinks that they need to gussy up the fight for climate justice and climate change.
Wow. Oh. Okay. All right, Maureen, you got to get this one because you got two right and two wrong. So this is a must. This is a must get, Maureen.
Okay.
All right. Do here we die. Go.
Beto O'Rourke's son concerned that Trump will order Ukraine to investigate him next. Is that real or is that the Onion?
Real. I don't know.
Let's see.
No. No. Oh, Maureen, it was such a strong start. Two right in a row right out of the gate, but you didn't. No, that's not real. That was the Onion.
Okay.
Maureen, you're not going home empty-handed, okay?
Okay.
Because you're going to get a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. All right, Maureen?
Okay.
Thanks for playing. You got to hang on, okay?
Okay, I will.
All right. Maureen's going to hang on, but she gets herself that the desktop weather station, which is a really cool thing. All right. So we got another round here. Are you ready, Tom, for round two?
Yes, sir.
All right, here's Warren. He's in Bolingbrook. Hi, Warren.
Hey, how you doing this morning?
All right. You familiar with the Onion?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so you just have to guess whether these headlines are real or from The Onion. You get the majority of five, and you're a winner. Are you ready?
Fantastic.
Okay,
all right, yeah.
Let's do it.
All right, Warren, let's get the music going. Okay. Let's go over to Europe. A Disneyland Paris visitor on a bad LSD trip falls into Adventureland Lake and turns up naked after a 130-person search. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Yeah, I'm going to say that's real.
Let's see.
Woohoo!
Okay.
So, in other words, where was that?
I've been on that trip.
Hello. Where was that again? What?
I was at Disneyland Paris.
Disneyland Paris. The lesson is don't drop acid before going to Disneyland Paris.
Yeah, go to Disneyland in the good old USA.
Good Lord.
Really experience Space Mountain.
All right, Warren. Good job. You got your first one right. Here we go.
Okay.
All right.
Your next headline, Warren, German court rules that hangovers are an illness. Is that real or is that The Onion?
You know, I'm going to say real.
Excellent!
Wait, come on now. Ho, 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 ho.
Yes.
That hangovers are an illness?
Yes. This was because of a dispute over these kind of cure hangover things that get sold over the counter.
Yeah.
And essentially there was some legal debate over what a hangover was. And so, legally speaking, in Germany, a hangover is considered an illness.
If they need someone to explain what a hangover is, I had many years worth of experience. So, all right. Wow. All right. Well, Warren, two for two. Good job, buddy.
All right.
Okay, you got one more. You don't have one more. You get one more right, and you win. Here we go.
Gotcha.
All right. Let's go over to sports. Overwhelmed Dolphins general manager asks players to please use automated email form when making trade requests. Is that real or is that the Onion?
I'm gonna say that's the Onion.
Let's see.
That's hilarious. Yeah. That's got Onion written all over it, man. That's great.
Yeah.
All right, Warren, good job, buddy. Congratulations. Three in a row. You get Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of
yum.
Chicago's best deep dish pizza. You can find one of their 40 Chicagoland locations or you order online at loumalnati's.com. All right, Warren, hang on, okay, buddy? Congrats.
Fantastic. Thanks.
There you go. I got to ask you a question there, Tom.
Sure thing.
Did you see the interview with the... All right, so there was a house fire or a building fire in Philadelphia. And there was a guy outside the building who... there was a guy on, you know, like on the fourth floor or something like that. And a guy outside the building, and the guy in the building, while the building was on fire, is throwing babies out to the guy, and the guy's catching them. So he's become like this local hero. He caught a whole bunch of babies. This guy was throwing them. So, being a Philadelphia guy, being a Philadelphian, they interview him, and he's this guy. He's going, "Yeah, the fire was happening. I was just walking by. Man starts tossing babies out, and we was catching them." Unlike, he goes after a wide receiver on the Eagles, mentions his name. I can't remember what it was. Mentions his name and says, "Unlike that, I'd like to get unlike this guy." And he mentions his name. I'd just like to get that out on the air. So, in being interviewed for being a hero for saving a bunch of babies from a fire, he still trashes an Eagles player. That's a Philadelphia sports fan right
Truly.
There. The quintessential. I laughed my butt off when I saw the footage. I'm going to take this opportunity when you're interviewing me about me, you know, helping to save a bunch of babies by catching them. I'm going to slam our wide receiver on the Eagles. I was like, man, that is so Philadelphia. That is so Philadelphia. But then the player, I will say this, then the player responded. He responded on social network saying he is a hero and I would like to have him and his family come to the next home game.
And also play wide receiver
and
for me, please.
And also play wide receiver for me.
I swear to God, I guess the man's got hands like a digital clock.
I guess he dropped a bunch of passes on Sunday.
Yeah.
And so this guy takes a pot shot at him. But the fire department is still there. Like the ladders are up and everything. And this guy's talking about being a hero.
Yeah.
And he slams the guy. And which I can't remember the wide receiver's name, but he's on the Eagles. And of course, a Philadelphia sports fan is going to take that opportunity to trash his own team. I love that, man. That's fantastic. All right, let's take a break for the weather, and when we come back, we'll wrap up the show and talk about more priceless objects that were destroyed by morons. And if you want to jump in with collectible stuff, 312-981-7200. Right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio here, 18 stories of a beautiful downtown Chicago. It's a Wednesday. Welcome, Wednesday Man here! And what are we doing there? And that wraps up Wild Card Wednesday. Who requested that?
That's coming to us from Greg H. It's called Indian Summer by Jai Wolf.
Okay, there it is. We'll do Wild Card Wednesday again next week. All right, everybody. Hey, it's Nick DiGilio. What the hell? Welcome. Coming up, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And we are talking about this Cracked.com article where they talk a little bit about some priceless things that were totaled, that were destroyed by morons. That got us a few texts that have come in. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Nick, do you remember the woman who decided to restore a 19th century painting of Jesus? She was not a professional artist. Yeah, do you remember the side-by-side look of that?
It's horrifying.
That also reminds me of the, it reminds me of like the Lucille Ball statue that went up. Do you remember that?
Yeah, and I know Cristiano Ronaldo had a really bad one as well. It's horrifying.
Doc sends us a text that says, hey, Nick, in 2018, a wedding reception was being held at a community center outside of KC. A 5-year-old boy tried to hug a huge statue, Aphrodite Di, Kansas City. Glass, not anchored, it rocked and fell and shattered. The city of Overland Park, Kansas, charged his mom $132,000. Her homeowners paid $107,000. The city's deductible paid to $25,000. There's a video of online of the boy breaking the statue in Overland Park. Wow. Well, here's a similar one. This is a similar story. And we're talking about priceless things that got destroyed by morons. All right, here's another one. A selfie attempt ruined two Portuguese national monuments. In 2016, a man climbed up onto the 126-year-old statue of King Sebastian at the entrance to Lisbon's Rosio train station, which itself is a historical landmark, to take a selfie. Oh, my God. The statue fell apart under the weight and crashed to the floor. He ran, but got quickly caught by the police. No word on if the selfie was worth it. 126-year-old statue destroyed by a guy who wants to take a selfie with it. That makes me crazy. The selfie stuff makes me crazy.
This is why I don't take selfies.
God.
I have other people take my photo because that's how it works.
In 2012, Russian tycoon Dmitry Stroskin, ordered an outhouse on the estate of his French chateau demolished while he was in Russia. When he came back, everything except the outhouse was destroyed. and the villagers living nearby were livid. Stroskin committed to rebuilding the chateau, but the authorities clamped down on him so hard he wound up with a fine and suspended jail sentence for using wrong insecticide. Everything but the outhouse was destroyed when he got back.
Classic.
War photographer Frank Capa was with the U.S. troops on D-Day and took 106 up-close pictures of the battle. He handed the next... He handed the negatives to Life magazine, where an overeager 15-year-old assistant turned the heat up way too high while developing them and destroying 95 of the photos. The heat gave the 11 surviving photos blurry, haunting quality that helped make them memorable, but they lost 95 of the photos. That's unbelievable.
Who allows a 15-year-old in a dark room?
That's a good...
Is it at Life magazine?
Good question.
One of the biggest magazines at the time?
How about this? For 300 years, the Tree of Tenere was the world's most isolated tree, within 250 miles of unbroken desert around it in every direction. It even appeared on military maps, and locals had a taboo against harming it, even though it was the easiest object on the planet to avoid. It got hit by trucks at least twice. The last hit was in 1973, and it killed the tree. There's a picture here, and it looks like it's a still from Fury Road when they come across that tree in the middle of the desert and tie the truck because they're stuck in the mud, and they tie the truck to the tree. Let's see. When a Da Vinci sketch was found in 1998 among drawings by Italian artist Stefano Della Bella, restorers got to work on it. They screwed up spectacularly by dropping it into an alcohol and water solution that erased Da Vinci's fine vegetable-based inks. They didn't even bother to test the technique in a small area, as was protocol. All that art historians were left with was that hope that one day high-tech methods can bring back the sketch. Oh, my God. In 2013, when contractors at the Indian Museum in Kolkata broke a priceless lion sculpture from 250 BC, the museum just kind of shrugged. They tried to put it back together using chains and pulleys instead of modern equipment, which is how it got broken in the first place, leaving nothing but visible cracks. All right. In 2010, an adult and a minor went paintballing on a sacred Native American site. They splattered paint all over the site's the designs on the rock faces, ruining 38 areas. In his defense, the adult tried to claim that he thought rain would wash all the paint away. It would if he had bought biodegradable paint rather than the cheap stuff. Oh man, unbelievable! Well, that's kind of heartbreaking. All of those stories. Wow. All right, well, hey, thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back tomorrow, Triple Play Thursday. Rod Pyle is going to join us. We're going to talk about the latest space stories. Have a lot of fun with him. And Ad Astra, the Brad Pitt movie, is out, which is also named after the magazine that he edits, or has the same name. So Rod Pyle is going to join us, Triple Play Thursday, and more.